Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE SmackDown Live.
All right, Brandon. How do you feel about that John Cena Roman Reigns exchange at the top of the show? How do you grade that overall?
I kind of went through a wide range of emotions during that. I thought Cena started out kind of on a low note with like the strange D jokes that just kind of weren't landing, and the crowd didn't even really seem to be all that into it. And they've been pretty forgiving of Cena's like lowbrow humor since his return, but I didn't think it really worked. And I thought Reigns felt a little bit off of his game. I mean, he was still good, but it almost felt like he was kind of in an uphill battle with Cena. I thought that John really brought it home in the second half of the promo, and I really liked the direction that he took the segment in saying that, you know, Roman Reigns is probably better than him in the ring, and he expects to be beaten up by Roman Reigns. But for Cena, all that really matters and all that it takes is a three count, and he believes that his longevity and his experience in the ring and his mental toughness and grit will allow him to hang through the beatdown long enough to maybe catch Roman by surprise and get a three count. And I really like the story he told there.
Yeah, I thought the strength of the promo was Cena painting that picture of this is what it's going to take to embarrass you and make you a footnote in me making history in my career. What I didn't think – I was on a roller coaster ride with you, too, and I got to say I had really high hopes for Cena Reigns, and so that plays into this because this came quite a bit short of my expectations. Reigns has been so good that I want his material to be just top shelf these days. And he was fine. I mean, I think he played off of Cena just fine. I don't think he did anything to turn fans in his favor overtly. He didn't try to go with Cena and risk becoming uncool, in a desperate attempt to try to keep up with him. I think he just, said that's not what I'm here for and my time is valuable. You know, sort of I'm here out of obligation because I'm the champ and I'll listen to you, but I'm not going to sell for you. And that was fine. What I didn't like is the meta stuff. I think that there's a way for Cena to reference that Reigns earned the world title. And once he earned it, because you want to be in the storyline realm when you're cutting a promo, try to sell people on a match where the best part of the promo is, I just need to score a three count against you. In other words, it's a competition in the ring. We're not here off to the side discussing business and drawing power. And so I wish he would have started by saying, you've beaten everybody. You know, you've won the Universal Championship, sometimes impressively, sometimes you've been a weasel about it. But once you got that title, WWE, of course, wanted as many people to watch this product as possible. And every time I tuned in, it seemed like the crowd was saying they wanted you to lose. They didn't want you to be the centerpiece of a show. But you walk around now like you own the place and everybody's happy you're here. Nobody's happy here. Something, again, I mean, you can go a million directions, but the what I'm looking for is something that's more storyline-based and less meta, less insider. And Cena's digs at Reigns where it's not working. And I'm looking at Reigns as the Universal Champion going, it's working. He's the champ. He keeps winning. And seeing it's like it's not working, it's like nobody ever on SmackDown talks about ratings. Nobody talks about drawing power. And when I look around, I see sold-out crowds every week since they left the Thunderdome. I hear about SmackDown being the number one show in the key demo on Fox on Friday nights. SummerSlam is going to sell out. Like, I don't – Cena's reality – or Cena's framing of Reigns' failure doesn't match anything that the average viewer is watching. They see this mega successful guy in front of sellout crowds going to a stadium a week from Saturday to play in front of a sold-out building. Where is this failure that Cena's talking about? I just wish he would have said, you're super successful in the ring, and the promotion is puts you on every poster that they put every champion on, and nobody likes you. Nobody liked you when you were trying to be liked. That to me was the place to go here. And instead we got this muddy meta crap that I was worried about with Cena's first promo. I thought they'd move away from it and they didn't. Am I looking at this wrong, or do you think that I've got a point here.
No, that was going to be my next point to discuss. The fact that they went in a place that not only did I think was unnecessary, but it comes off as wrong because you're forcing the crowd into considering the meta aspects of the angle instead of giving consideration to, you know, what else Cena could be talking about. Because when you look at it from a fan perspective, like when Cena says this isn't working, I mean, this is the first time Roman Reigns has worked in his career. Like, we spent how many years begging for Roman Reigns to turn heel because babyface Roman Reigns was not working. And now he's, you know, putting on career performances. He's in the role of a lifetime, basically. This is exactly what he should have been. And for the first time, it is working. And yeah, like you pointed out, the only conclusion that you can draw when Cena says that is, well, ratings are down. And that is true. And I don't think you want to draw attention to that, just like I don't think you want to draw significant attention to your now competition, which if anything else that I took away out of that segment tonight, it's that, you know, Vince McMahon may be talking about not caring much about AEW, but man, the biggest star that he's created in the last 15 years is sure aware of them.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I know Cena was giving out report cards, and I gave this segment a C-. I'm not sure if that's being hard on it or generous, so I just kind of stopped in the middle. I thought it'd be a little cliche to give him a D because, you know, that. So I went with C-. Yeah.
Did you get the sense that the crowd, because it seemed like some of them picked up on it, but not all of them. Did you get the sense that they noticed the CM Punk reference?
What was the CM Punk reference? Because I think I even missed it in my.
So Cena said that after he wins the title from Reigns at SummerSlam, he's going to rush out of the ring, leap over the barricade, and he might even blow him a kiss goodbye.
Exactly,
the way Punk did.
Yes, gotcha. It did go over my head. I remember the line, and it went over my head, and then I heard people referencing CM Punk, and now, of course, it seems obvious. I guess I just got too hung up on he says, like, Punk or something, or verse.
Right.
Because he made a reference to Dean Ambrose, you know, driving
right.
him up. So I was kind of thinking that. It felt, I mean, even the reference to Dean Ambrose as a setup for the reference to Punk, it seems like, yeah, why even acknowledge? I mean, I just, you know, AEW drew under 1 million viewers this week. SmackDown's going to draw more than 2 million this week. It's like, act like you're ahead, even if you're scared, even if you're nervous, even if you're upset, just act like you're ahead. Cool. Well, let's introduce the show and get the phone calls here and emails. I know many of you are probably watching Christian and Kenny Omega in the background here on Rampage. So we appreciate you turning the volume down on Rampage and joining us here on the post show. We invite your calls. I ask that you remain spoiler free on Rampage. We're not going to do a Rampage discussion other than as it relates to SmackDown, because I like our post shows to be kind of focused on the brand and the show we're covering. But because of the occasion here, I mean, if you want to make a reference, a tangential reference to it, just don't give spoilers away, because I think there'll be some people who wake up and listen to this or are listening to us and then want to watch Rampage on DVR later. So just a courtesy to them. Don't bring up if the title changes or whatever. I'll monitor the show, make references that aren't spoiler oriented, just, you know, but if there's some big news other than like a title change or match result, you know, someone showing up perhaps, I probably won't be able to refrain from bringing that up if it's newsworthy.
I opted to keep it off, and I figured I'd watch it later because there is preseason football on as well. So I've got that off the background.
You know, when I say SmackDown's going to draw more than 2 million viewers, it might take them all weekend to get there with preseason football on. you know, they don't normally face NFL competition. Somebody emailed and said, do a poll and find out how many regular SmackDown viewers are watching football. So we'll see. I am curious if Omega can carry Christian to that 5-star match that Don Callis promised Christian on Wednesday. I thought that was a little meta, but also a good line because, you know, it's sort of true.
I think they've got a good hook with that match simply because I think so many people are assuming that he's not going to face Omega at All Out, which means, you know, how do they get out of it tonight? If they do get out of it tonight, I mean, maybe it takes them a while, or maybe they just do the match at All Out. But, you know,
there is
definitely the sentiment that it won't happen. So if that's the case, do they get out of it tonight?
Plus, you know, Christian said on Impact last night, he's going to be in the Impact Zone next Thursday night. And, I mean, it's I mean, it'll be dated as we talk about it here since we're about to find out. But if Christian wins the title and then shows up at the Impact Zone with the title, that could be where some sort of beatdown angle takes place.
Right.
And then Christian is the Impact champ, but he's not able to defend. And then that gets addressed the next day in Chicago at United Center. So there's some timing that can work out pretty well. If Christian were to win the title, as a bit of a consolation prize over getting the headline All Out. So this is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show following SmackDown on Friday, August 13th, 2021. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the editor, publisher, founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter covering professional wrestling since the late 1980s. And I'm also the editor, publisher of the PWTorch.com website, news and commentary and live TV and pay-per-view coverage. So check it out, PWTorch.com. Including my live reports every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night on Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, but much more throughout the week from many great contributors. We just got such a great team. And crowd's popping for Near Falls. I'm sorry, I'm not going to do that. The other voice you hear is Brandon LeClaire, who is a PWTorch.com contributor, used to cover SmackDown alongside my reports on Friday nights. He now is the alt perspective reporter on pay-per-views for WWE, and he'll be doing so a week from tomorrow, a week from Saturday. Covering SummerSlam. Brandon, welcome back to the co-host here. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Glad to be here. I said in the lead-up today, I tweeted out that I'd be on the show tonight and said that it's been like a few weeks. The middle of July is when I was on last, and it feels like it's been a whole year in pro wrestling since I was on because so much has happened in the last few weeks.
It's just been crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
Man, I went away for a couple of days last week, and I was joking with Zach Haydorn of the Torch when I came back into the Twitter sphere and said that I'd been gone a couple of days, and the entire landscape of NXT shifted. And
yeah.
he said so. It was my fault, and I took credit for it. It was me. It was me, not Vince.
I recommend people check out Tom Stelp and Nate Lindberg on PWT Talks NXT on the Tuesday show. A lot of discussion. They spent the first hour talking about all the changes in NXT. And really, I know Tom's got some compliments on Twitter for this, but a good long kind of commentary on the changes, the potential changes, and a little bit of an against the grain perspective, although it actually largely matches up with mine in terms of what Vince seems to be doing with NXT, of course, with some caveats. And that's where the nuance comes in, and that's why you need to listen. So if you're not a subscriber to the free PW Torch Daily Cast lineup, all you have to do is search PW Torch on your podcast app. On Mondays, we have a MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans show. Tuesday nights, it's a show covering NXT, PWT Talks NXT. Wednesday nights, it's the Impact post show, or excuse me, the it used to be Impact, the All Elite show with Mike and Andrew. And then Thursdays, it's our ROH-themed show. Friday's a best-of show. Saturday, Deep Dive with Rich Fan, who covers a single topic in-depth. And then Sunday, it's the long-running Wrestling Night in America, hosted by Greg Parks. It also includes, pay-per-view post-shows, live call-in shows, just like this one. But it occurs on, it'll be this Saturday night, or a week from Saturday night after SummerSlam. Sorry, I'm stammering because I'm watching Rampage at the same time and things happening. So forgive me, people, if I'm not used to watching something while podcasting. I will not do this regularly. It's very distracting. Our phone number, we are our interactive show. We'd love to hear from you. Regular callers, always welcome. First-time callers or infrequent callers, also very much invited. Our number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. We'd really like to hear your thoughts on Roman Reigns and John Cena. I know I've seen a variety of perspectives and takes on that opening segment tonight. I want to hear yours, whether you agree with us or disagree or have other points that you want to make. And anything on the show is fair game. What's next for Baron Corbin? It's a whole other topic, Brandon, and we'll get into it in depth. But if John Cena gets to fight Roman Reigns by stealing a contract and signing it when it was meant for Finn Balor, I think Baron Corbin's a new Money in the Bank briefcase holder, and I think he can cash it in. I mean, the lawyers can't have a double standard, can they?
I mean, I was thinking about that when he ran off with the briefcase, and Pat McAfee said to Michael Cole, "Is he money in the bank now? Can he cash it in?" And Cole was just like, "No!" Like he said it so sure of himself, and I'm like, "Well, I mean, 2 weeks ago, Cena just kind of waltzed in and stole a title shot, so I'm not so sure about that. I think maybe they'll, if they need to fall back on precedent, they do at least have it with The Miz and Otis. Otis, of course, The Miz did eventually win the briefcase from Otis, but I believe he did so in a match, not by just stealing the briefcase. So they do right. At least have that to fall back on.
Yes, yes. Our email address, by the way, too, is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. By the way, if you're curious about how we're going to be covering Rampage, out of the gate, we're going to have Tyler Sage, a frequent voice here on the post shows, and a PW Torch Daily Cast co-host with Ryan Sullivan covering ROH on Thursdays. They Tyler is covering Rampage tonight in a VIP exclusive Rampage post show. So if you're looking for kind of that instant fix of Torch style analysis, including very likely an on-site correspondent, go VIP, and tons of other benefits come with that, including getting this show with ads and plugs removed, and a ton of VIP-exclusive podcasts, 30-plus years of archives, including hundreds of retro radio shows from the 1990s, on demand on our ad-free VIP site, and Apple Podcast app compatible, single click, don't have to enter password, don't have to enter username, just you get an email when you sign up and you click it once and boom, it launches Apple Podcasts and you're in as long as your subscription is current. We're very proud of the technological hoops that our team went through to make that so user-friendly. That is new this year, but you can subscribe on just about any podcast app out there. If you're an Android phone user like me, I recommend Beyond Pod or Dogcatcher or Google Play or Google Podcasts. Many others work also. So go VIP to get everything that we're producing during the week, including our brand new Rampage post show that should be up tonight or tomorrow morning, hopefully tonight if all goes smooth, with Tyler Sage. He'll have rotating guest co-hosts just like here on the Wade Keller post shows. Ryan Sullivan, his ROH podcast partner, is on the inaugural edition tonight. So that'll be fun to listen back to. I will be doing a Wade Keller hotline. As always, for VIP members running down SmackDown, I'll also have some thoughts on Rampage, and we'll kind of work out the cadence and the format on that in coming weeks as we kind of adjust to this new schedule, and next weekend's going to be crazy with SummerSlam and NXT TakeOver 2, plus, of course, the United Center. I don't even know what adjective to describe what's going to go on a week from tonight right now.
I sat watching SmackDown tonight thinking, like, man, you know, I'm genuinely excited for SummerSlam. Like, this is a good card. I think I'm going to enjoy the show quite a bit. And then, like, in the back of my head, I'm thinking, and CM Punk, like,
I know.
I mean, like, yes. It's not even a guarantee, but I guess it's as close to a guarantee as you can get. It's a big week.
Yes. So go VIP, everyone. pwtorch.com/goVIP. This is a great time to dive in and just experience what it's like to have that next level of our coverage. It's a streamlined listening experience on these free shows, and then you get a ton of other stuff throughout the week on our podcast feed. And the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter with some of my writing that is VIP newsletter exclusive, including my cover story in NXT this week, my editorial on attending SmackDown in person in last week's issue, and other exclusive columns in the newsletter. But anyway, one other thing. Rich Fan is in attendance tonight at Rampage, and I'm going to be talking with him tomorrow in a VIP exclusive Everything with Rich and Wade podcast, and we'll get his first-person perspective on being in the building, in addition to what Tyler, Ryan, and their on-site correspondent have to say about tonight's show. So lots of coverage coming at you, especially if you are VIP. Okay, plugs and table setting and introductions out of the way. Let's get to phone calls. I'm interested to talk about a variety of things we have not even begun to talk about yet on from SmackDown tonight. Let us begin here with area code. Where was I just now? Oh, yeah, Chris in Newfoundland. Chris, you're up first today. What do you think of SmackDown?
Gentlemen, good evening. How are we doing? Hitting leadoff tonight, I see.
Absolutely. Good to talk to you, Chris.
Yeah, good to hear you guys as well. I'm going to stop. I really disagree with you guys about that Cena segment. I mean, yeah, it was puerile. We all knew it was going to be puerile. You have Cena in there. There's only so much he can do. He's not rapping. But I thought the way he said, you know, they asked me to come back to take care of you, and talking about how protected Roman was, that actually makes sense with Pierce and Sonya saying, yeah, we think this is going to work with the contract, because they actually wanted him to be there in the first place. So it all kind of fits into place. So I don't know. I think if you take out some of the more teenage humor jokes, I think that the promo worked, and it made me more excited to watch the inevitable result.
Let me ask you to clarify, and I'm sorry if I'm just slow on understanding this, but that you differentiated between Cena making the case that Roman Reigns has been overpushed and overprotected, and in the next breath he says, they called me to come in and end your title reign. I still don't quite get that. So tell me how that isn't contradictory. Because I'm open to liking this more if I'm just kind of not getting something that probably made sense to everybody else but me and Brandon.
So the way I'm seeing it is that, yeah, they did protect him to start with, but now it's almost like the monster has outgrown the cage. They can't control him anymore. So they need someone to sort of rein him in, pun not intended, which for me is unusual, and just bring him back under control. Like they wanted him to be protected and be the face of the brand, but now he's got his two cousins with him. He's controlling the entire show. He calls the shots, not Pierce, not Sonya. So the only person they could bring in who could beat him is Cena.
What about our argument? I'm lukewarm on that, to be honest, Chris, in terms of that being a thing, because I think he could have explained that a little better. You know, like just very specifically said, you had every advantage given to you, and now you've gotten out of hand. And, you know, management called me in because nobody can stop you, but I think I can. You know, something like that, a little more storyline oriented. But how do you reconcile the idea that he's saying Roman failed? Like, I just don't think his words and the idea he communicated was anything other than you've been like a rating failure. But what does that have to do with beating people in the ring? That's how you become champion. They don't award championships based on high quarter hour ratings. That's never, never talked about on TV, except Cena in the storyline breaking that fourth wall.
So I think sometimes as long-term hardcore wrestling fans, we overestimate how many people pay attention to ratings. If 2 million people are watching SmackDown, maybe 500,000 of them pay attention to ratings. So if you say, Roman, you failed, I don't think the majority of the audience, the casual fan, if you like, is thinking, oh, they must mean that ratings are down. They are just thinking that Roman is a failure, and they might not go any further than that with it. Obviously, we know what he's talking about, but that's the sort of leveled promo that Kenny Omega's been cutting and Don Callis has been cutting. Like, it is meta.
I don't like any of it.
It's meta. Yeah. Well, it's meta it still makes sense to people who don't get the meta joke.
No, but I disagree. Like, how does a show that every other moment of the show is about is presented ostensibly that these people are beating each other up to get a three count, and the person on top or who taps people out is the best, and that's how you win. And now Cena saying Reigns, the Universal Champion standing in front of one sellout crowd after another every Friday night about to headline SummerSlam, is a failure. They never talk about ratings on TV within the narrative structure of SmackDown. And yes, of course, there's the other stuff, but like you never, in the middle of like Big Bang Theory, there were never references to, well, we're the number one show on CBS. Like, of course they wouldn't say that. That's not the world they live in. So why is Cena bringing us to this whole other world that doesn't make any sense based on the way that the parameters and the rules of engagement for promos otherwise?
Because they don't talk about ratings, but they do talk about 3 million people watching Reggie's TikTok, which I believe they mentioned a couple of times over the past week or so. But that's the sort of thing they do. They do brag about their social media engagements and their followers and so on and so forth. And he's a failure in two regards. He can't win on his own. And Cena mentioned that. He's got his lackeys winning matches for him, and sometimes he cheats to win. He can see that as a failure. And the fact that the fans have never cared about him, which he also can see as a failure. He can easily point it at, people aren't watching this show for you. They're watching it for me. you're not the reason the fans are here. They're here to watch you get beat. They're not here to watch you succeed. That, in the eye of a casual observer, could be seen as a failure.
Well, I like your promo. I just wish Cena gave it. That's my point. Like, I think all the material's there. I'm not disagreeing with you, Chris. I think a lot of things were implied or they were sort of sideswipes. But, like, just cut a promo that fits the story that they've been telling us for the last, you know, year with Reigns on television. And it's like, it's not 2004 where every promo was, oh, let me break the fourth wall, let me cater to the internet fan. Like, it's so passe. It makes me think Cena's kind of behind, or the people writing for Cena, or Cena's overruling the people writing for him. Like, that's just not cool anymore. I'm surprised it's getting cleared. Brandon, jump in. I'm sure you got it.
I think it's interesting that during a week where we've talked so much about the proclivities of Vince McMahon and his attitude toward things and his tendency more or less to in some ways fly off the handle in case in point being the situation with NXT, that he would essentially greenlight a dig that deep at his golden boy. I think that's worth pointing out. I mean, is this in a way Vince McMahon delivering a message to Roman Reigns via John Cena? I mean,
right?
Because
you
kind of have to wonder, because if Cena's message, you know, we interpreted it as being maybe not on the surface level, but again to the hardcore fans, as Chris pointed out, even if it just is a dog whistle or a message to them that only they're going to pick up on. I mean, that's still, at the end of the day, Vince telling Roman Reigns, like, hey, you're failing. You're failing to uphold this brand. So I think that's sort of a buried lead in here, too, is you've got the former guy telling the guy that, hey, you're not as good as I am.
No, I think that's an astute point and a possibility. Rich Fan brought that up after the initial Cena promo, that maybe this is Vince, you know, venting through Cena. I mean, SmackDown is the most watched pro wrestling show each week, and we just got through a pandemic, and the consensus is that Roman Reigns is the primary reason people have stuck with the WWE product over the last year. So Vince blaming Reigns for not being Stone Cold Steve Austin in the midst of, you know, the Monday Night War era in terms of a difference maker, I'd like to see what Vince can do without Roman Reigns for a month and a half. I mean, if that game is being played, I'm coming to Reigns' defense and Paul Heyman's defense on this one, going, yeah, let's see where your numbers are if you don't, you know, bring in, you know, John Cena and whoever else he could bring in, The Rock. I mean, if you just subtract Reigns right now, he's in a tough spot. But I wouldn't put it – I mean, I think some of the stuff going on with NXT is Vince looking for excuses and venting, because the networks might not be happy with where the numbers are coming out of Thunderdome with all the promises of the ratings they pop. I think they've been pretty decent, but it all has to do with what your expectations are or the networks are. If there's tension between Vince and Reigns legit and that's seeping through these promos, that's a really fun story to follow. I have not been able to confirm that through people I know in WWE, but it's intriguing if that is what's going on. And it doesn't make me endorse the promo, but it makes it more interesting from the chair I sit in if that is what's happening. And I can't really see a good storyline reason for it happening otherwise. That's the other thing.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting thing to follow and to ponder. And I think that in a larger context here, there's been so much vitriol tossed at WWE this week and at Vince McMahon for what has gone on with NXT and the state that Raw is in relative to AEW's product, which seems to be firing on all cylinders and for all intents and purposes is poised to get even better with the addition of CM Punk, with the addition most likely of Bryan Danielson. I mean, we're talking a huge uptick in the, you know, the presence and the viability of AEW as a serious competitor. And what often gets lost, I think, in that conversation, because of how bad Raw has consistently been and the downfall of NXT and now sort of the just cleaning house of NXT, SmackDown's been a really good product for the most part. I mean, it's not a perfect show, but neither is AEW. SmackDown's still a show that I genuinely look forward to watching every week. And so it's interesting to think that, hey, even though ratings haven't been all that great, there is a product that WWE is putting out week in and week out that is better than most of what they've done in recent years.
And the majority of the praise is on
Roman Reigns.
And I miss the storyline, the Thunderdome era storyline with him and the Usos. I mean, the Usos just, you know, doing their old bit on a big screen and being a team again with no nuance between them and no, you know, family tension. I guess the family tension in the has gone from the Bloodline to the Mysterios, but that's a sidebar to our main conversation here. Chris, I'll throw back to you for a follow-up or a different topic, either way.
Yeah, quick follow-up on that. Do you think if AEW and SmackDown switch channels that the viewership would switch with it? Because I have to wonder how much of that 2 million is due to Fox and not to programming.
Fox is an advantage because, I mean, for people, especially international listeners, you get to watch SmackDown for free with a $5 antenna or a $40 antenna if you want to get fancy on your TV. It's a broadcast channel. It's free. So anybody and everybody can watch it if they have a TV. And whereas for Raw and AEW, you need cable or a streaming service. So it's in more homes and it's more available. Friday night's a tough night. You know, it's not. It's one of the least attractive nights to be on, and that probably works against SmackDown's viewership. Probably not as much as Fox helps. But no, WWE has had under Vince McMahon, a 35-plus year head start here. So I think AEW it's going to take a little while for them to catch up. Although, you know, WCW immediately started beating Raw on the ratings, but they also were an established company with a huge following, especially in the Southeast, but they had been on WTBS or TBS for years. So I don't think the channel is all. TNT is right there with USA Network as a top channel, and AEW is not beating Raw. So, you know, if AEW is beating Raw, I'd say, yeah, maybe Fox would make the difference to catching up to SmackDown.
Couple of things to that point. I think AEW first and foremost deserves a world of credit for coming to the point that they have in the short time that they've had without the benefit of being an established brand. I mean, to come out of the gate beating NXT and now challenging Raw in the 18-49 demo on a fairly consistent basis is a huge accomplishment in and of itself, given that there was just no basis to start from. It's not like NXT was, yes, a new product on national television, but it had been an established brand under the WWE umbrella for several years prior to that. For AEW to come in virtually cold and do what they've done so far is incredibly impressive. And to the point about SmackDown being on Fox, one other thing that I don't think gets talked about very much in relation to the ratings and SmackDown is, we know, of course, that DVR counts as long as they watch it in the first however many days. Is it a week or is it a couple days? I forget.
It's both. Okay. So you get credit. I mean, there's same night viewership, and then there's 3 day and then 7 day, and those are the totals that they track.
So to that point, a lot of people are out and about now, and frequently will put TV on or watch TV on the go on their phones, on their tablets, whatever the case may be. If they have a terrestrial streaming, terrestrial cable package, so let's rule out the people that are, you know, using YouTube TV, that sort of stuff, Sling, streaming, whatever the case may be. If you have a terrestrial cable package and you have a DVR in your house, it's probably smart enabled. It's probably able to be accessed on the go. Network television channels, your DVR content from network TV can be watched anywhere. So it can be watched out of home. If I, for example, I was in a hotel last weekend in Boston, and I was able to watch SmackDown on my tablet, DVR'd on my TiVo at home here in Maine. If that show had been AEW, for example, on TNT, I wouldn't have been able to do that out of house. You have to be attached to your home internet.
Yeah.
So a network TV channel can be viewed anywhere, which also I'm sure helps in those immediate overnight and 48-hour window for DVR viewership, because if you've DVR'd the show, you can pick it up anywhere.
Yeah, yep. All right, Chris, back to you. Anything else for us before we move on?
Apart from that opening segment, I think this show is just really a whole bunch of nothing. But a couple of things that I think are kind of related really kind of bothered me. So it looks like Apollo Crews is just basically done, and I have him chasing Reggie within a couple of months. And then you've got the whole Baron Corbin, which was one of the only other good things on the show, and they took away possibly the entertaining part and had him steal Big E's case, which, if they let him cash that thing in, that's the biggest slap in the face you can give to Big E. So I don't even want to touch on the fact that Apollo and Big E happen to have one thing in common, and it doesn't look great on WWE, but what are they doing?
With Big E or Corbin or Cruz, it could be any of those.
In general, like.
that's a big. Problem.
But no, like Apollo hasn't been on TV for ages, really. Like he's been sort of around. That he's got Aziz. Yeah. We all thought that was going to be a turn in the making, and they just randomly take the title off him with very little build. And then Baron Corbin was doing this gimmick. It was getting over. Owens beats him in a match that came out of nowhere, unadvertised, and now he can't beg for money anymore, so that whole gimmick is gone. And, like, if they're really shifting to the happy Corbin thing, he's got the briefcase now. What else are they going to do with it? So they took two things that were somewhat working, although Apollo, I would argue, less so, and just completely 180'd out of nowhere. Like, is this panic booking? Are they just crazy? Are they dumping Apollo and Big E down the card? Like,
yeah. So let me throw to Brandon on that. What do you think, Brandon?
Yeah. So I thought that both of these moves were a little short-sighted tonight. I saw the writing on the wall with Apollo when he didn't even get an entrance. I mean, if your Intercontinental Champion's not even getting an entrance on TV, you're probably not long for holding that championship. There had definitely been a renewed focus on Shinsuke Nakamura in the last few weeks. I'm not quite willing to refer to him exclusively as King Nakamura yet. I'm hoping to hang on to Shinsuke as long as I can. I think that Nakamura is likely a better choice to hold that title right now. He's got some momentum. He seems to be sort of a flavor of the week or flavor of the month with Vince McMahon, which means the Intercontinental title is probably going to get a little bit more attention on TV, and I think that's overall a net positive. Apollo Crews was working in the beginning, but after that Big E feud, they just ran out of ideas for him. And unfortunately, the roster is so thin at this point that it's hard to find many challengers, heel or face. So it does feel like they've kind of given up on Apollo Crews. I was high on the push in the beginning, and I'm glad they rejuvenated him and got him into a position to make him a viable competitor on the show. But I just don't know that it was working all that well beyond what they got out of it. So I'm not terribly upset about shifting the title to Nakamura, but with any title change, I'd prefer that it at least get 1 week of build. I mean, at least advertise the match a week in advance.
Yeah, I'm not too bummed out about Big E's reign ending. I think Big E just had to deliver better. Maybe he needed better material. Oh, Apollo Crews. Maybe he needed better material, and maybe he needed better opponent. I mean, there's a lot of blame to go around, but I don't see this as, like, prematurely ending this red-hot title reign, unfortunately. So I'm okay, because I think Shinsuke does have more momentum. Don Callis made fun of Christian for, Kenny's going to give you the 5-star match you've always craved. I just want someone to give us a 4-star WWE match with Shinsuke. Like, just please figure someone out who can have a showcase, 18-minute, 22-minute match with Shinsuke, and just go, Shinsuke, can we just have one match out of you in your whole run in WWE that will just, like, let people know how good you can be? I think he's got one more 4-star plus match in him, and so that's what I'm craving. But Brandon, back to you.
Hasn't happened since the very first one in NXT.
I know. I'm saying main roster WWE, even. Yeah, in NXT, right. It wasn't great, but at least there was one. Yeah.
To the conversation about Big E and Baron Corbin, I don't know how much longer Corbin begging for money was going to be interesting, so I'm not terribly upset about that portion of the character coming to a close. Or
it was fun while it lasted, but it could have gotten old quick. That's kind of my perspective, so I'm okay with it, like you're saying, I think.
Yeah, I think that anything longer, even tonight, I mean, when he was out there for a while in the beginning, I was like, man, this is going to get old sooner rather than later. And I think that Corbin is talented enough and he's proving that he's versatile enough to do to go in another direction with this and still have it be entertaining. Yeah. What I don't like is a comedy character, which Baron Corbin certainly is at this point, being so heavily embroiled with Big E. Because number one, I want Big E to be taken more seriously as Money in the Bank. And two, if Corbin is the comedic character, it's also going to bring out the comedy in Big E, and I'd rather he tone that down.
Chris, any closing words from you before we get to a bunch of other callers on hold here?
Yeah, I'll leave you on the contract signing. At some point, we're going to get a contract signing where nothing crazy happens, and even Sonya referenced it. But like, yep. I don't know if you noticed it when Bianca got attacked, she took like three or four steps back before vaulting over the table and landing on Sasha. And all I could think was, man, Reggie does that freehanded. Like, you are not doing yourselves any favors. So Reggie greater than Bianca. You heard it here first. But I'll let Kyle dig deeper into that one. And thanks for taking my call, gentlemen.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Chris. All right. Kyle's not up yet, but I see him on the switchboard. We'll go to Nick in Brattleboro next. Nick, thanks for calling in. From Vermont, what'd you think of SmackDown tonight? What stood up?
Well, first of all, Reggie for women's champ. No.
Come on, it's not 1999.
We're going to party like it's 1999 now. Anyway, I thought the show was really kind of bad.
Hey, Nick.
What?
Nick, can you turn down the volume on your TV?
Oh, sorry. Yes, I'm sorry. Yep. I was watching that other show. is that better?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry about that.
Nick, I have to say, it would be weird if it wasn't, if you turned it down and we could still hear it equally loud. Like, that'd be very weird. I'm just saying.
Well, I am in Vermont. You never know what's going to happen up here.
All right.
It was like, I didn't know whether I was watching a talk show or a wrestling show tonight. I mean, there was just so much. I was like, come on, I want to see some wrestling. And the first half hour was Cena and Reigns, and I thought it was actually funny. Cena must have done, how many times did he do 1, 2, 3? And I thought I heard them piping in the 3 a little bit to get the crowd used to it, because then when he said it at the end, the crowd was obviously with him and was going 1, 2, 3,
Nick, I got to say that I am insulted on behalf of all of WWE fans that you think they need to be reminded of what number comes after 2.
Well, that they were supposed to say it out loud. No, anyway, I was just very disappointed tonight. Obviously, it was a very by-the-numbers, you know, pre-pay-per-view show, but I wanted to see some wrestling tonight, and the matches were all really quick, except for Owens and Corbin, which actually I thought was a pretty good match. But I wanted to see more wrestling tonight. I that's my main thought.
No, I think that's fair. I mean, when you have a contract signing at the end and a really long talking segment at the beginning, that really long talking segment better be really good. And it wasn't, I don't think. I think it didn't hit the bar of expectations. I mean, when you add Cena to the Reigns act and you end up with something less exciting than Reigns leaning back in a lounge, well, I don't want to overdo it, but I mean, the Reigns character leaning in a lounge chair backstage while Heyman stood over him, like, I was glued to every second of all those. And him, you know, coming to the ring and the drama with Jey Uso, that was more interesting than John Cena doing this half meta, half storyline, whatever that was tonight. I mean, it felt like it's a big match. I mean, there were, you know, things here and there that made it seem like a big deal. And ultimately, you know, are people revved up to see the match? That counts the most. But, you know, I mean, if I'm to critique it, I was definitely expecting and hoping for something more. So if you don't do any of that really, really well, yeah, you want to have some really good stuff in the middle. And, you know, Corbin Owens was 7 minutes. with a commercial in the middle. Rey and Dominic was 3 minutes. No commercial, obviously, on that one. The Street Profits, Alpha Academy, could have been really good, but they only gave them 4 minutes. And the Nakamura match was good, but even that had a commercial break in the middle, and it only went 10 minutes. So, and that was just okay. So, it wasn't a blockbuster SmackDown by any means.
Yeah. Well, it was what I thought actually was interesting when you were talking with Chris about Vince. It almost seemed to me like if he wrote that or if he had a lot of input into both sides of the scripting, he was sending a message to Roman, and then he also took some real nice little slices at John Cena, the Nikki Bella comments.
Yeah.
You can fly back to I'll pay for your plane ticket back to Hollywood. It seemed, I kind of had this sense of the global Vince over it going, I hate you both, and I'm gonna show you that I'm actually the king here. And ultimately, that's going to be the downfall of the WWE unless he gets someone in his ear who can talk him down.
I think they wanted to give off the vibe of this is getting into shoot territory. I don't think acknowledging a breakup with Nikki is like, whoa, I can't believe he went there. So I don't know. I mean, I think they were trying a little bit, but they sort of dipped their toe in the water, and it didn't take for me. I didn't buy it as legit. Again, I just thought this was a dress rehearsal, first draft that should have been improved upon, and it was live, so unfortunately it can't be, unless next week is better.
Yeah, I didn't get the sense that the crowd bought into the Nikki Bella comment either, and I thought that was the low point of Roman's part of the promo. Mm. I just don't think that they were going for the shoot, gotcha moment where the crowd kind of gasps, like, did he really just say that? And, I mean, the Nikki Bella breakup was very public. I mean, like, it was shown on television on a WWE property. Like, it was all over Total Bellas. Everybody knows about that. Like, Cena didn't sell it in a way that made you think it was a big deal. I mean, it just didn't land at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Nick, what else?
Last thing. I'm wondering why they've taken the Usos away from Reigns. Even to have them standing behind him, I so miss Jay doing his Disney hyena thing behind Reigns, that, from The Lion King, where the hyenas are prancing around behind Scar, and I just miss that. That added so much depth. It's great having Paul there, and that's great, but I don't know. I really miss Jey Uso, and I'm just sorry to see him not as in there anymore.
Yeah, the Usos are a good tag team. And they should be a good, obnoxious heel opponents for Rey and Dominic and whatever storyline is going on with them. But I also have in my mind, like, they kept Jimmy around after the DUI stuff for this. Like, it's not like there was some integral storyline where he was essential to the plan for Roman. And, when I wrote the cover story on how I thought the Jimmy DUI would derail a whole key storyline, A, I didn't think they were going to keep Jimmy around. But B, if they kept Jimmy around, I thought there'd be some essential storyline he was part of. And he's not. So, I think seeing Cena against Reigns is going to be a blast at SummerSlam. No question about it. I'm not less excited about the match because of SmackDown tonight. But I'm not more excited about it either. I think this promo treaded water. And some of the criticism, and we've got some emails criticizing it too. I think a lot of people are kind of felt the same thing we did. In fact, Marcus, we're hoping to hear from him on site in Tulsa. He said it was he's going to call in and he's going to be happy to begin by complaining about 12 minutes of a snore opening.
Mm-hmm.
So Cena came back red hot, and I think Reigns and Cena are cooler right now than they were a few weeks ago.
I do think that with Roman and the Usos, this is the first big opponent that Reigns has really had.
With all due respect, Edge.
Yeah, I mean, you can point to Edge, but I think that they'd already started the distancing with the Usos at that point. I mean, they were involved to some extent, but by the time that Edge was deeply involved with Reigns, the Usos were starting to feud with the Mysterios. So the shift was already there. I think beginning with Edge and transitioning full into the John Cena feud, there's been distance between the Usos and Roman Reigns because for the first time, he's had legitimate main event opponents, whereas previously, I think that there was some focus on building more than one story at once. You had the Roman Reigns versus whoever the challenger of the month was, and also as a supplemental piece, because they didn't think the challenger was strong enough, you had the battle within the bloodline between Roman Reigns and Jey Uso, Roman Reigns and Jimmy Uso, and Jimmy Uso and Jey Uso. I think that with Edge, and now to even more extent with John Cena, they feel comfortable telling just the one story. And I don't necessarily agree with that. I think that the bloodline aspect should still very much be at the forefront. But I do think that that might be the line of thinking, that with a star as big as Cena, they don't need to tell that peripheral story right now.
Yeah, I think that is a line of thinking. If tonight's promo was better, I probably wouldn't be talking about wanting the Usos part of this. Good, keep them out of the way. This just hasn't lived up to that. Cool. Nick, any closing words?
Yeah, last thing, and you can ask Marcus, but I wonder who had more empty seats, SmackDown tonight or Trump back in June of last year? Because it looked like the upper deck was empty.
I'm assuming we'll have a big news update here within an hour of Trump being reinstated, right? Isn't that
you? Yes, right.
Yeah. So.
But if not, isn't it, they gave another date, too. Like, is it September 22nd or the 30th?
Yeah, something like that.
The grifting for the marks never stops. My God, how rich are you going to make this guy with this con? I mean,
like the doomsday prophecy, like where the world is going to end on May 15th, and then on May 16th, it's like, oh, I made a mistake. It's actually July 10th.
Right.
Sending in money. Like, yeah, they keep sending the former guy money over this con. It's ridiculous.
MyPillow guy, for his whole cyber thing, every three seconds he was giving the promo code for his pillows.
Yep.
Anyway, don't want to get into politics. Have a good weekend, guys. I'll chat with you next week.
Actually, we didn't get into – thanks, Nick. Yeah, for sure. We didn't get into politics. We got into pointing out obvious grifters who are playing people for marks. at the expense of the integrity of our democracy. All right, let's shift here to Mike in Atlantic City. You are up. Your thoughts on SmackDown, Mike?
I thought it was a good show, you know, to build up SummerSlam. I don't really think it was real good for wrestling, but I don't think it needed to be because – I think tonight's show was just all about building up Cena versus Reigns and Sasha versus Belair, you know, which I thought were built up really good.
I'm glad you brought up Sasha Belair because, I mean, there's a little reference by Brandon earlier about a contract signing, you know, going awry. But I thought Sasha was a good heel and Belair was a good babyface. And I like when they book babyfaces to kind of be wise to what's happening, but also willing to fight against the odds. And I thought it was a good, smart kind of paint-by-numbers contract signing breakdown that made you, if you're a Belair fan, even more intensely wanting to see her, you know, put Sasha in her place.
Yeah, I thought it was better.
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, Brandon.
No, I was just going to say, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to decide. Brandon, go.
I defer.
Let's go to Brandon.
I defer. Go ahead.
No, you can't do that. This will never end. I have to be the final say. Brandon, go. I insist. I'm going to mute Mike so, Brandon, you can say what you're going to say. There's no way for Mike to interrupt you now.
Now I can't stop laughing. You can't put me on the spot.
All right, I'm going to mute you, Brent. I'm going to mute you for like 10 minutes. You're on suspension for that.
All right.
I go to you. And you drop the ball. I'm going to start taking digs. I'm going to start scripting people to take digs at you. All right, go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I knew Sasha and Belair were going to make the contract signing work. I mean, most of the contract signings nowadays in WWE are stale, and, you know, they're just not entertaining. They're just old, you know. But I think, you know, they delivered tonight on the contract signing. I knew Sasha and Belair would deliver because, you know, people want to see that match. And I figured, you know, something good would happen. I like the ending. You know, the visual of some sort of, like, bank statement with Belair's hair, you know, up against, you know, her mouth. That was great. I really loved that visual.
Yeah.
And Carmella and Vega coming out.
The stanky braid, was that what you called it?
Yeah.
The stanky braid.
Yeah. I didn't know what to call that move there.
Yeah.
But Carmella and Vega coming out. What did you think of that with Carmella and Zelina Vega coming out? Are they going to form some kind of alliance with Sasha, you think, in the future? You know, if so, I don't really think that's needed. I don't think you need to go that route. I don't think they need to get involved in their SummerSlam match, although it might happen. But what's your guys' take on that? Are they going to form some kind of a stable, you think? Or?
Yeah, good question. Was this just a moment of convenience so there could be a 3-on-1 beatdown, or is there more here, Brandon?
Yeah, I kind of get the sense that it was more the latter. I mean, I don't think that they want to create a trio here, because if they do, who does it leave on the SmackDown women's roster? That's kind of the thing, is that the roster is so thin right now that the entire division was in the ring tonight outside of Toni Storm, who has just disappeared off the face of the earth.
Yeah,
so strange. I mean, Natalia's on the shelf. Obviously, they're cooling off Tamina or sort of keeping her on the Raw side of things. So, I mean, this is all they've got in terms of women over on SmackDown. Liv Morgan, I guess, is the one other person missing. But I don't think that they're going to go the direction of a trio here. I think it's more that, you know, Bianca has had her tiffs with both Carmella and Zelina Vega. Sasha can kind of, you know, guns for hire, more or less, for Sasha to come in and get some revenge on Bianca. And I thought the segment worked. I thought it was good overall. I thought Sasha's promo was mostly solid. She stayed away from the laugh for the most part. Bianca sounded good. And the beatdown at the end looked good. The visual to close the show was good. I do agree that while this wasn't necessarily a noteworthy SmackDown, and there wasn't a ton of wrestling, I thought it was a net positive for the most part for building SummerSlam. I mean, we've talked about that opening segment and the problems with it, but I think it did, you know, it gave a little bit of fuel to the fire for Reigns and Roman, Reigns and Cena. So I think that overall it was a positive night for SummerSlam developments, even if it didn't come off as a terribly noteworthy show.
By the way, if anyone's just joining us here on the live stream after Rampage, feel free to jump in the conversation with us on SmackDown. I'm Wade Keller, joined by Brandon LeClaire, and we're live streaming here covering SmackDown. No spoilers, please, if you do call up and did watch Rampage, but also join this conversation. But our number is 347-215-8558, and when you call, push 1 on your phone. You're also, as always, invited to email us, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com.
These 1 hour Rampage shows are going to make me long for the days of 1 hour NXT.
Oh, yes, I know. It was weird when I was doing the TV format report for Patrick Moynihan, who did the write-up for PW Torch, and I created kind of the shell for it, and I was like, at the top, I put hour number one. And I'm like, oh, wait, that is the only hour. I don't need to do that. That, like, never happened. You know, I mean, it's ROH, like, there's just so MLW, but it's like the major cable shows are 2 or 3 hours. So yeah, it's weird. Cool. Yeah. Mike, back to you.
How spectacular did Sasha look tonight? I mean, she looked, like $1 million. Like she just looks so much like a star. I mean, she's, you know, the best dressed person in WWE. And that's what, you know, a lot of people say, like, she just like looks spectacular. It just stands out, like, so much.
Yeah, ring gear is so important. AEW stepped up their game. Yeah, I mean, the Bucks especially. I think the Bucks just, they are such a higher-end act when it looks like they're putting time and money and thought into their outfits. And, you know, Nick has come alive again after being kind of in the doldrums for a long stretch, too. And, you know, just having, you know, having expensive and detailed ring gear is a big deal. And you know, Charlotte's stepped up her game and changed things up from the rope. And Sasha looks great. I mean, we could go on. I mean, and Mustafa Ali is going to look good thanks to Mansoor. Ring gear counts for something. And you have to wear it well, too. And Sasha does. She's got that. She's always had that X factor. And yeah, she's cast correctly, and I think I'm doing a good job with her role right now.
To that point, too, as important, if not more important than ring gear, I think is music. And Banks and Belair have two of the better themes in WWE right now. I think that the Snoop Dogg version of Sasha's theme didn't work quite as well when she was a babyface, and I actually wish that she'd go back to the original version. But this version definitely works better for her heel character. It feels like a big deal. It feels like she's a big act, being that she has Snoop Dogg, you know, essentially wrapping her to the ring every time she comes out. And Belair's theme has so much energy to it. And I think, like, the crowd bounces along to it. She bounces out onto the stage, and she's sort of incorporated the cadence and the rhythm of her theme into her entrance to make it part of her act. And I don't think that can be understated. Like, Belair, a big part of Belair's act is that really, really good theme.
Yep. All right, Mike, anything else for us?
Well, touch up on that, and then I'll switch over to Cena and Reigns. Do they have to – are they told, Wade, like, how to dress, or can they, like, pick that out completely on their own? Like, do they buy their own stuff and just pick out completely?
No, they've got a seamstress, or whatever the current term is for that behind the scenes on the team, and they work closely with WWE's you know, costume makers, outfit makers, whatever. They work with them. And I mean, I don't think many people some people probably show up with their own stuff, but it generally gets approved through Vince.
And how big is Seth Rollins' budget?
whatever the coupon is that makes it that way, according to Nick Barbati. No, Nick said he's getting better. I'm leaning on Nick for the Seth fashion updates.
Seth's suit tonight looked like it looked like he robbed the fabric off of his 90-year-old grandmother's nursing home chair.
I think that's like a feature, not a flaw, of what he's doing.
Oh yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Like, it wouldn't work with Batista. Like, no, I think Kenny Omega's just like whatever he pulls off the closet, whatever's clean, he wears to Dynamite. Like, I imagine, and I could be wrong, but I imagine Kenny Omega's like house looks like a 23-year-old kid out of college with laundry strewn everywhere and old game controllers that don't work, and a TV on top of the box it came in. And he just shows up to Dynamite with whatever clothes happen to be clean, or at least he smells them before he puts them on. Like, he's not trying. And maybe that's what he's going for, but other people put a ton of time and work into it, and you can tell, and it makes a difference. And like I said, the Bucks are, and WWE music and outfits is a big part of the big time major main event major league vibe that they go for, along with the big screen and the good lighting and the major arenas. That's all stuff they're cognizant of. I mean, it helps make up for some deficiencies in other areas. So, yeah, go ahead, Mike.
You know, on the Cena Reigns segment, I like this segment because I mentioned last week I was looking forward to them facing off one-on-one on the mic and everything. But, you know, I just think it could have been better. It wasn't like it was back in 2014, I think the year was, when they had their feud. It wasn't like their promo segments back then. You know, I think, like, if Cena would have explain more why Reigns is a failure, it would have been better, like you said, Wade. Like, he could have mentioned, like, when Reigns was been basically shoved down all the fans' throat, and that's why he's a failure. But he didn't cut that promo. But that's, you know, he could have said that. You know, so, I mean, yeah, they could have went, you know, more all out, but they didn't do it. Or it could be that Cena just thinks, you know, he's conceited and he's a jerk, and now he treats the fans like crap, so maybe it's supposed to be that Cena's just talking trash on Reigns because he doesn't like him now. So that could be it. So there's a lot of different factors it could be. But, yeah, it could have done more. It could have been better. But I still enjoyed it. I'm still real excited for the match and everything. I'm very excited for the match. Like you said, Wade, I think that's going to be a lot of fun, their match at SummerSlam.
I don't know why he thinks
Reigns is a failure.
I'm with you guys.
Have a good night.
I appreciate it. Yep. Thanks, Mike. Have a good night. Have a good weekend.
Yep.
I do wonder too if Cena didn't want to bring up the crowd booing Reigns so strongly when he was a babyface because he got the same treatment so frequently.
Yeah, hot kettle pot, yeah. I know it, life gets complicated, but, I mean, he could be self-deprecating about it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, we can you know, critique and come up with ways to make it work, but I think that point illustrates why there were probably some competing interests in how much sense they wanted to make, but where that might – things are going well for Cena. You know, I mean, he keeps acting like the crowd isn't sure yet, and there's Team Cena and Team Roman. This is your last chance to choose. And it's like everyone's on Team Cena. Like, they tried to do a let's go Cena sucks battle chant, dueling chants, and it was like, let's go Cena sucks. Let's go, Cena. Dead spot. Like, it didn't even get to two. Like, nobody wants to chant Cena sucks right now, not even for fun. It's not even like, you know, you suck for Kurt Angle's song. Like, people are just, they want to cheer Cena, and Cena's still on this, like, it's like they wrote promos 3 weeks ahead of time. He's still acting like it's a tough call for fans, and it's not, although after this week, maybe it'll change. I don't know.
I mean, it becomes increasingly harder to hate a guy who very clearly is back because he loves it, and who admittedly in hindsight, I think most people can objectively say that he had a really great run and did a lot of great things. And yeah, there were times where he was drastically overpushed, and yeah, there were times that I think he had some go away heat with the crowd, and there were people who were big footed in the way of making sure that John Cena stayed on top. But we're so many years removed from that at this point that, I mean, I think he's seen as a positive legendary figure for a lot of these people. It's a wrestler they grew up with. I think I'm even a little bit surprised by how much Cena is surprised that people are behind him 100%.
Yes, I agree with you. All right, let's go to 773. Go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Boris from Chicago.
Hey, Boris. Man.
Hey.
It's like
I'm glad I muted it right quick. I wasn't expecting you guys to go into quick. I got Solar Monster in my background. He's about to start a live. I'm like, oh, shit, they coming to me first. Excuse me. But man, I enjoyed tonight. I don't know if y'all getting the Rampage yet. Oh man,
that right,
one
hour
went by so fast.
Hold on, I asked people who are listening and you didn't hear it. We're not talking Rampage because I don't want spoilers, as a courtesy to people. So I'll come back to you in a little bit, and you can do what else you were going to do. Let's go to Kyle next. Kyle, go ahead. What'd you think of SmackDown tonight?
And anything else is there. You hear me?
Oh, yeah, now I can. Go ahead and start over. Sorry.
Just enjoyed the beginning and the ending, and everything else in the middle was there, like how it felt last week. So I was like, it was so. But something I wanted to get into that I found interesting in that main event segment was that the fact to have Zelina and Carmella now teaming with Sasha after last week, they felt like having Sasha and having Zelina and Zelina talking to Sasha and Bianca saying that it wasn't about you, Sasha, it's about me and Bianca. It was like, well, it's not about you at all, Zelina. So it was so weird that all of a sudden now they're a team. They're mm-hmm. being their forming this team. I found that so weird. All of a sudden it's like okay, I don't. It's that probably was really bizarre to me. I didn't get it.
I would like an explanation. I would like, you know, WWE to care about that enough to give us something, even if it's through social media or WWE.com or something, just something to fill it in a little bit that the announcers can reference instead of just ignoring what you're bringing up, which is an astute point, Kyle.
Yeah, but besides that, it was overall a good segment overall, and then And I really forgot what either woman said, honestly, because I was still kind of distracted with them being together and then the beatdown. So what I remember, I think it feels like that when it comes to SummerSlam, when it comes to this rematch. Now it's going to be really, I'm sure they're going to be okay having this rematch. I think it's not going to be. I'm not looking for perfection like they're like their WrestleMania match. They're looking forward to a good match in general, but not, you know, perfection. But so when you talked about the theme songs with both of them, it's like, yeah, both of them have really good theme songs. And when it comes to Sasha's and comes out with the Snoop Dogg's remix version, she had that when she was a heel the first time, but then throughout last year, her being the babyface, she had
right.
it. So it's like, it was that whole situation where that was, I just didn't see the problem with it from it, her being the babyface. I don't know, just, but whatever it is, what it is. But that's how I viewed the theme song situation. But well, yeah, when it comes to this match, though, it's this, and the down that she gave her and put it in, tried to put her back in the bake statement again, like she did 2 weeks ago. It was like, wow. And then she used the braids. That was really cool and creative. But that makes me think that Sasha's going to lose, or I just think, I either think this match is going to end in some type of disqualification, or Sasha should win, because she really shouldn't get pinned again, because I don't think that, you know, she lost at WrestleMania and then she loses at SummerSlam, so either she wins the championship or this match ends in a count out or a disqualification. But what do you think about that, because that whole thing was so, that whole situation.
Yeah, Brandon, I guess we can get a little bit into predictions here as far as that goes.
I think it depends a lot on what's coming down the pipeline for the SmackDown Women's title. I don't think that there's many challengers for either woman right now. I don't know if they're going to move on from Bianca and Sasha after SummerSlam. I think maybe at least one more match. Extreme Rules is a September pay-per-view, so yeah. It wouldn't surprise me if we get them one more time at Extreme Rules with a stipulation, and I actually think that works, because at this point it'll be the third match, and we'll have likely earned some sort of stipulation by that point. So that works for me. In that mm-hmm. respect, I could see it being a non-finish at SummerSlam, given that they don't have the pressure of main eventing the show. I mean, obviously, Cena and Reigns are going to main event the show. So I don't think that there's this huge expectation for Bianca and Sasha to go out there and steal the show. I think that they're in a really good spot, being that they aren't going to main event. The pressure is off in some respects, because they've already had the really great classic WrestleMania main event, and now they can go out there and have the follow-up and have a really good match and have some sort of non-finish if they want to get that third match in. But beyond the Banks and Belair feud, I pointed to this last time we talked, Wade. The only person that stands out to me is a Toni Storm, and that's the only thing that I can think of, is that they're holding her back right now so that she's a fresh face coming in to face whoever comes out on top of this feud, which, if Storm remains a babyface as she was when she debuted on SmackDown, it makes more sense for her to be going against Sasha.
Very good. Kyle, anything else you want to add?
Yeah, you know, I said I liked that before too. Honestly, was like I said before, I would like to see a Sasha Toni Storm feud. I'll be really. I love Sasha and Bianca facing each other, even though it's the second match. They didn't really face each other that much, which is kind of a good thing, too. You know, they always have people always see each other over and over again, and they'll give a breather. At least this had some time, this had months to breathe, so it's not, like, overexposed like it usually is. So that part is kind of good, too. Yeah, it's been months apart. But, yeah, just the women's division besides Sasha and Bianca at this point, it's like, it's kind of like Raw, but different, because I'm more intrigued on the SmackDown side of it. It's like with Toni Storm, and then also taking back Shotzi Blackheart at this point, with them being, you know, and also the tag team division itself is super weak in general as it is, because all teams I could think of is Shotzi and Nox and Tamina and Natalya, and they haven't been, and Natalya's injured, and they didn't even mention what's going to happen. They said, what was it, last week, 2 weeks ago, saying there would be some type of announcement of the tag team championship. They never even announced it at all. So what do you think that's going to lead to heading into and the women's division in general on SmackDown and, you know, in general, because it's all over the place. Liv Morgan disappeared again. And, you know, I don't get that, and the whole situation is been Bianca.
Yep. I've just put more thought into the women's tag division right now, listening to you ask about it, than I have in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's just it. I don't think they care. I just don't think that there's any attention being paid to that women's tag division. I think the titles are an afterthought. I think that Tamina and Natalya were a feel-good story, but they never really cared that much about them. They haven't really had any moment of real importance since their inception, beyond maybe Bayley and Sasha's initial run. I mean, Nia and Shayna Baszler held on to them for a long time, but they were mostly a comedy act during that period. I just think there's no attention being paid to that title, and that sort of speaks to the larger division with the larger issue with the women's division as a whole, is that they're just so singularly focused on the world title picture that the secondary feuds and the tag team titles fall by the wayside, and there often isn't room for them on the shows. And there just aren't enough women on the roster to really get fresh matchups and to cycle things in and out. They're so thin right now that it just makes things really, really challenging. But on a positive note, to Kyle's point, with Bianca and Sasha, they truly have treated the two of them and this feud like a main event program, in that they are kept. And that's really important to making the match feel big. I mean, think about – just take the two SummerSlam women's title matches, for example. I mean, Sasha Banks and Bianca Belair, to me, feels like the second, possibly third at worst, biggest match on the card. And the Raw women's title feels like it's halfway down the card or more, because all three of those women have just faced each other over and over and over and over again.
All right, Kyle, we got more callers on hold, so quick closing words from you, and then we'll move on.
Yeah, so I think about the Seth Rollins promo saying that was also good, too, and I'm just looking forward to that match between Rollins and Edge. And like I said before, the SmackDown side of SummerSlam is what I'm looking forward to the most, especially those three big matches anyway. But that's what he is. That's Rollins' promo was
cool
there. But yeah, that was it.
Cool. Thanks, Hal. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I did enjoy Michael Cole referring to Sasha and Belair as the other main event at SummerSlam. You know, with all due respect to whatever Raw's got, the other main event besides Reigns and Cena is this.
Wait, I definitely wanted to touch on that. When you look at this SummerSlam card, I mean, I think you can very easily make the case that Raw's world title match is the fourth most important match on the show, and that's behind all three SmackDown matches. I mean, this card is so heavy on the SmackDown side of things. I would put, obviously, Reigns and Cena well above Lashley Goldberg. I would put Rollins and Edge in terms of interest and general storytelling above Reigns, above Lashley and Goldberg. And I'd put Banks and Belair well above Lashley and Goldberg.
Yep. I'm not going to argue with that one. I think people know I won't. You're right. All right, let's go to Jay in Michigan next. Jay, good to hear from you. What do you think of SmackDown tonight?
Good to be heard from, guys. Overall, I actually just seen little clips of SmackDown because it was delayed in my area, so I think it's getting ready to probably come on in a few minutes here. But from the things I did see, I just wanted to ask it, and I tuned in late to you guys' this show because I was watching Rampage as well. But I don't know exactly what all you guys have covered. I just heard the last couple calls, but I wanted to ask you guys about the Reigns and the Cena, because I did see the majority of that promo. I just wanted to – my feeling on that is that I think that they could have taken a different approach, because it's like they're really trying to, like, redo the 2017 – aspect of this thing with Cena saying, you know, Roman's not over and all this other stuff. But I just feel like that doesn't apply anymore. You know, Roman's been killing it for over a year now, and the things Cena saying just don't apply. And, you know, like you guys had also mentioned in the conversation that I did with you guys, like, Cena is super duper over with the fans now. So they could have just put the traditional approach. It's like they're denying the fact that he is really over, and
yeah,
this is really what they wanted for a long time. So they could have just took it this way.
Jay, I want to talk about that, but the background noise with you is making it real tough to hear. I don't know if you can take us off speaker. It sounds like you're in a washing machine or something. I'm not quite sure if we're on speaker or what. But I'll put you on hold and just kind of underline. I mean, Jay didn't hear what we said earlier, and he's saying what we're saying, Brandon. And I have seen on Twitter some people going, oh, that promo is on fire. They mentioned Dean Ambrose and CM Punk and Nikki Bella. And it's like, that's the type of thing Cena's going for. And I'm sorry, that's anybody can throw shoot comments in. Oh, it's a shoot brother. That's not making money. That's getting people to give you, you know, compliments on Twitter for breaking the fourth wall. And it's like, that's not the art of selling tickets in wrestling or selling pay-per-views. The art of selling pay-per-views is immerse people in the match within the parameters of the normal rules of engagement of a promo. I see it as kind of, I mean, every once in a while, it's fun. You know, I mean, like if it's an aside, but it can't be the core. You know, like I thought Don Callis saying, you know, Kenny Omega will, you know, is going to give you the five-star match you've always wanted, Christian. Like, okay, I kind of popped for that. But that wasn't the core aspect, the selling point of the promo. It's just a little aside. And a little bit of that goes a long way. And to me, that's what Cena was leaning on too much here. And as Jay just said, it doesn't apply. Like, when Rock came back and Cena, I think, schooled him on the mic. Not everyone agrees with me on that. I thought Rock was a little outdated. He was a little rusty, a little dusty, and he wasn't keeping up on things. And I just sort of sense, I mean, you got to, like, people who don't watch WWE for 4 months or 4 years, they're behind. Like, you can't, the narrative changes week to week. And somebody who it was really fun to pick on and make fun of can suddenly in 3 weeks turn things around and be doing good work. And, you know, if you're not watching every week, you're going to miss out on that and sound dated. And I thought Cena sounded a little dated here, like he's been busy with other projects. And it surprises me. Maybe I'm in the minority. I don't sense anecdotally that we are. And Jay is adding to that. So, I mean, hopefully Cena brings it next week. But Reigns is almost like standing there going, go bury yourself. You're out of touch. I'm going to stand here and look cool. Jay, back to you. And I'll throw you Brian after that.
Yeah, sir. Sorry for my audio, man. I'm just walking to this store, so you know.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how bad it is, but yeah, and you know, I might be in that minority too, because I agree Cena did kill the Rock on the mic all those years ago, and it feels like Roman's doing less for more, and even if he did take by saying, like, it don't feel necessary, man. It don't feel necessary that he needs to do, you know, go for the Nikki Bella pops and things like that. Like, man, he's just such a strong character now. He doesn't even need that stuff. So, you know, that's really the only thing that I really wanted to touch on, because I didn't see very much else of the show. So I got to, you know, catch up and everything. But, you know, I really just wanted to get you guys a feel for that, because I just feel like they could have done, because I think the match is incredible. And I think they could have just done so much more to build it, and they just going to the tired stuff that they used 4 years ago that don't apply.
I agree. Jay, thank you. You made me firm up my opinion on this, but I welcome anyone to try to talk me out of it, because I wish I liked it more than I did. All right, let's see. We'll go to Sean in Tennessee next, as soon as I can get the switchboard to work here. There we go. Yeah, Sean, what do you think of SmackDown tonight?
Well, Wade, I want to say, Brandon, it's good to talk to you as well. I want to say, everybody, first, go VIP, because, Wade, you were talking about it at the beginning. You know, this is the best time, but, you know, I've always talked about you, Wade, and what you guys do in depth for the Torch, and just all the guys that love wrestling get to do what they do and just get to talk about it. So, you know, you got to get it, especially with Rampage now starting. It's just too much stuff to not get into. You have to do it. So I wanted to throw that out there real quick. And Brandon, how are you? Good to talk to you, my friend, as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. It's good to talk to you too.
Yeah. I'm with you guys. Like, the promo, I thought Cena brought it in better at the end of the promo, just saying, you know, the hustle, like, you know, you're going to keep knocking me down, but I'm going to get back up, and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to beat you. Like, I did like the end of it, but the 1-2-3 was too much, and all the fourth wall stuff, I didn't like any of that. So, yeah, I'm with you mostly on that. But I wanted to jump on again. You guys were talking about when Apollo lost the Intercontinental title. And Shinsuke, like, obviously Shinsuke should have won. He's, you know, on a better role. They're doing, trying to do more with him. And so I understood why they would change the title. But number one, I want to just do a quick rant as far as if you're the Intercontinental Champion, I don't care how low Vince sees that championship. It needs to be, you need to have your entrance for the for that championship match. I'm sorry. Like, you have to have it. I don't care if you don't care about Apollo Crews anymore. You shouldn't have put the title on him then. Like, I'm tired of WWE making these lower, you know, U.S. title, Intercontinental title, it a lot of times make it feel like it's crap. And I'm tired of that. What do you guys think about that? I hated that. I absolutely hated it.
Brandon.
Yeah, I was not a fan of that. I thought that it was kind of a dead giveaway as far as the direction that they were going. I thought it made it pretty clear that Apollo was losing either tonight or very, very soon. I do think that the champion should always get an entrance, and I think that they have definitely devalued the Intercontinental title in the last couple of months, and I don't think that's Apollo Crews' fault. I think that his run started out relatively strong, and they had a decent thing going, and whether it be a sense that they got that he wasn't connecting with the crowd or they just weren't happy with his performances, I don't know, but if you make the conscious decision to demote a guy, don't start that before you take the title off of him. And it felt like that's what they did. I mean, every time we've seen Crews on TV in the last few weeks, I don't think he's gotten an entrance, and he's unceremoniously lost. So, I haven't been blown away by what Apollo Crews has shown. So if you want to demote the guy, fine. You want to get the title off of him, fine. But don't start that process until after you take the title off of him, because by doing it the way that they did it, it devalues not just Apollo Crews, but it devalues the Intercontinental title that now you have on Shinsuke Nakamura, who has the responsibility of trying to bring it back to some form of respect.
Well put. I agree with that. What else, Sean?
Yeah. Yeah, and then I think, well, like I said, the Baron Corbin, I'm with, it was getting old already to me, because I think they kind of ruined it the last couple weeks in certain ways, as far as just, you know, him trying to get him attacking Balor, and then you think he's going, you know, you think there was a chance of going babyface, but then he's clearly not, and then, you know, this is where Kevin Owens is now. It's kind of just sad. I mean, I'm glad Kevin's getting some wins, but it's just sad the way they have him right now. It's kind of just sad. But then stealing Money in the Bank was just stupid. Money in the Bank's getting worthless now. It's just beginning to be a pain because they just devalue it in a lot of ways too. So I didn't like that. But the main two things I had real fast was when they were at the contract signing and Sonya, when they started, you know, jibber-jabbering back and forth and getting on each other, and then Sonya's like, man, we're not going to have this. These contract signings go haywire all the time, and I'm not going to have that again. It's like I bawled out laughing. I thought it was hilarious because – you know, when you have a contract signing, you know this is going to happen every single time. So why do you keep having contract signings? I wonder what you guys thought about that. And then first I'll say the Seth Rollins video package was great. I loved the way Seth had that manipulated. That was fantastic. And then do you think they lean more into a Rey Dominic heel turn this time around? Because I think they did, just by the way Rey was telling him to be humble and hungry, and he was saying good things to Dominic and keeping him focused. So I thought it was good the way he was saying it, but is it like, oh, Dominic's going to be like, oh, you're kind of talking at me a lot, and I'm just tired of it, and I'm going to turn on you. What did you guys think about that?
I think it's gone back and forth, and I don't know if it's intentional or a case of acting or scripting or whatever on who we're supposed to feel sympathy for, but Dominic getting so distracted for so long made me want to like throw, you know, if I had an apple in my hand, take it out of MJF's hand and throw it at Dominic. They turn around, dummy. They're on a big screen. They can't hurt you. There's a guy who's going to hit you. So I was with Ray on that one, but Ray's been sort of like a pestering dad, like a nagging dad, like, you know, get it right. Watch your dad do it. And Dom is like, yeah, Pops, yeah. He's like being super nice, like not in a condescending way. He's like, yeah, totally. I'm with you, Dad. I look up to you. So I feel like there's still kind of mixed signals, and maybe that's intentional, Brandon. What's your take on the totality of this?
Yeah, it feels like they're not really sure where they want to go with it yet, and I guess I disagree in that respect with them, if that's their line of thinking, because I think the pretty clear direction here, if you do want to go down the road of dissent between the family members, is that, you know, Dominic turns on Ray. I don't think that there's really much of a scenario where Rey Mysterio is going to be a heel in this scenario. I think that if you went the direction of Rey turning on Dominic, you're more likely to have the crowd still siding with Rey because he's the legend and sort of the beloved figure, and Dominic is not a particularly imposing or strong babyface. So I think that if they're going to go down this road of dissension between the two, then Dominic is clearly the choice for being the heel. And I think that the promo work and the teasing, for the most part, has sort of lent itself to that idea that Dominic is underexperienced and he's inexperienced and he does not have the in-ring ability quite yet to keep up with his father, and he's making a lot of rookie mistakes, and Ray is trying to teach him, and Dominic is too young, too stubborn, too carefree, and just doesn't want to listen, and eventually, of course, turns on his father.
All right, Sean, back to you. Oh, I muted Sean because there's background noise. Try again. Go ahead, Sean. Okay. What else you got?
No, I don't want a heel turn either way. I mean, I want them just to I want them to kind of get the titles back, but the tag team titles, like, you know, I don't want them flip-flopping a lot. So I'm kind of worried about where they're going to go with the tag team titles. I kind of want the Usos just to keep them because they're good in that role. You know, Ray and Dominic have done some good stuff, and so I'm kind of curious where they're going. But real quick, with Seth and Edge, like, where do you think they're going with that match? Like, do you just assume Seth's going to win? Because, I mean, that's where I assume they're going with it, because Seth's the guy that needs to do more, and Edge is, you know, just whatever you call the word star. He's what's the name for the guy who's been around forever?
Legacy star?
Legacy star, yes. Legacy star. Yeah. That's where I was trying to go. So where do you think they're going with that? And Wade, Brandon, you guys are the best. I always appreciate you taking my call.
You bet. Yeah. Yeah, Brandon, talk about Seth's promo tonight and the approach that they're taking with him being Edge Light and Seth taking delight. We don't need an on-site correspondent to tell us, and Marcus, you're still welcome to call us, to tell us that the crowd was disappointed Edge did not come out. It's tough when you have these, you know, legacy stars, these part-time guys, and they're not there every week, you know, maybe Edge came out after this is why on-site correspondence. Maybe he came out after the show was over or something and made the crowd happy, but they just didn't think it made sense for him to be on TV this week. But the crowd was bummed he didn't come out. But, you know, the Edge Light thing and pulling from their history, like, I mean, there was a time where ardent fans lamented how little attention was paid to history and the lost opportunities to draw from it. And, you know, say what you will about Cena's promo, but, you know, he's drawn from history, and certainly Seth and Edge, they pinpointed the overlap in their careers. I thought the video that they put together, the biased video, was well done, and I like that they showed Seth threatening someone to play it. Like, I like that touch, you know, before the commercial break. You know what you got to do. You better play this or else. Mm-hmm. So I thought there's some good touches there. I'm on the side of when Seth's about to cut a heel promo, I look forward to it. I think it makes people want to see him lose. I don't think it's a top heel character, and I think some people are hung up on that. Others just don't like the character, and that's fine too. You know, teach their own in that respect. But I think it works for this spot on the card, you know, kind of a third, fourth from the top heel, kind of borderline. I don't see him as a serious, you know, like, I don't see this character as someone who's going to be I guess I could see him maybe challenging like a babyface Drew McIntyre or something, but not at a WrestleMania. You know, like, I feel like they're defining him down, sure, a little bit with this, but I also think this is a pretty natural fit for him. I think he's pretty good at being the sniveling, whining, obnoxious type heel. And so he's kind of leaning into how I imagine if I'm a wrestling fan, he'd be in real life. And the rest of the sets we saw were fake.
Yeah, it's an improvement over what he has been doing for the last couple of months, and I'm really looking forward to the match with Edge. I think that They did a really nice job teasing this even before Money in the Bank. I think that the history is there and they're drawing upon it. I think for Seth to be looking all the way back to 2014 and being a bit obsessed about it, and even, you know, the way tonight that he said that Edge is taking him to places that he didn't really want to go. He almost, you know, relished at the idea, or he cowered at the idea that he nearly ended Edge's career. And then he sort of thought better of it and thought to himself that, no, you know what, this time he's a different Seth Rollins, and this time he'd actually do it. He'd finish the job. And I think that they're telling a good story here. I think Edge has been solid. I think Rollins, this is the best work that Rollins has done in quite a few months. And the promo really worked. The video package really worked to highlight the parallels between their career. And it drew comparisons that even I hadn't made. I mean, I left that promo, you know, not necessarily buying into the Rollins propaganda that he was putting forth, that he is just unequivocally a more successful version of Edge. But what struck me was really just how truly similar their careers have been positioned and how similar they are in terms of their position on the card, being that guy that can pretty much always be relied upon, and you can slot them in the main event and you can make them the focal point of your show for any given number of months in a year, but they're never going to be the guy. And I think that for a while, myself included, a lot of people thought that was Seth Rollins in the peak of his babyface run after beating Brock Lesnar. To me, it felt like he was starting to take form as the guy. And I think the further we got into that run, and once he met The Fiend, the further I felt like he got away from that role. And he's settling into this Edge-type role really nicely. And there's nothing wrong with a role like that for a guy like Rollins. And I think it, if Edge is any indication, it proves to be a really fruitful and successful career. So that was the most striking thing to me, was just the parallels between their career trajectories.
All right, very good. We'll go to Greg in Kansas City next, and then we'll probably – I know we got a couple other people on hold, but we'll probably get to Javier and email and wrap up the show. Greg – oh, now we got someone who sounds like they're in a laundromat. Hey, Greg. How's
hey,
it going?
I'm here. Thank you. All right. Yep. It's going good. And following up on a couple of the earlier posts, the thing about the Cena and Roman Reigns thing I found funny was, you know, WWE, one of the biggest critiques it gets from people, and I think rightly so much of the time, is how repetitive the product is and how repetitive the booking of the shows are. I found it funny that, like, Cena and Reigns are basically both pointing out, like, oh, you've been doing the same spiel for 15, 16 years. Cena says Roman does the same moves over and over again. So I kind of got a kick out of that. And then I would say that I agree with the critiques about, like, I go both ways in terms of the criticisms of the show not having enough wrestling, but also this is particularly a show designed to build one show, upcoming show, and three matches. And I mean, all three of those matches, or people in the matches, are all come off as big stars going into this, and I think those matches will deliver. So I agree with that. And I thought Seth Rollins, like, this was the best I'd heard him in a long time in terms of being on the microphone. So much better, obviously, than the droning promos he was doing for quite a while there. And so it was a show built to build up these three matches, and I thought the segments were okay. I didn't think anything – I mean, the women's thing was okay. I don't know if anybody brought up, like, the storyline inconsistency of Zelina and Carmella willing to act as, like, these henchwomen for Sasha when they were just Zelina was bad-mouthing her in a promo just a week ago, and, I mean, Carmella and Sasha had this drawn-out feud. But, I mean, the segment was fine. It got what it was supposed to get done, and it has established that match as one of the main events, and I do think they're still going to try to steal the show. I don't entirely agree with knowing, like, the mentality that a Banks has. I still think they're going to, like, try to steal the show and have the best match on the card. I mean, we'll see about that. But and then a couple more thoughts. You know, it's interesting that you've talked about this so much in your quite a bit in your Dynamite reviews, and we mentioned this the other night with regards to AEW, is that so strong at getting pretty much everybody who has a storyline onto the Dynamite show pretty much every week, whether it's in-ring segments. If people don't have in-ring segments, you have promos, you have video packages. And there are people right now who are doing nothing. Maybe it's just a holdover pattern because it's SummerSlam. We're waiting for after SummerSlam. But, you know, there's instead of like a Ziggler and Rude wrestle for the second week in a row against the Mysterios and having them have another match on TV, you know, they could do a vignette or promo or something. You could maybe, or maybe why aren't people like Toni Storm getting vignette or promo time to get the audience to know who they are, or Tegan and Shotzi. I understand you can't have a Natalya wrestle right now, but, you know, they could be doing promos. I mean, Liv Morgan could be doing something vignette promo-wise. There's quite a few people who are like that, and it's just there's ways to get out of this, like, repetitive formula, and it could be done, and I think that's really something. Like, once again, here I go again comparing the companies to each other. It's hard for me not to a fault sometimes, but, you know, there's things that could be learned in terms of, like, making the show less repetitive and more feel more fresh on a weekly basis, because right now, you know, we got to say it's fresh just before a big show, and they're building the big matches right now, so that's one thing. But, like, there's ways to get people on TV and freshen up the show sometimes.
Yeah. Going back to one of your earlier points about that was brought up earlier too, about the ratio of in-ring action that wasn't blotted out by a commercial too, was very low this week, but they did, you know, want three anchor promos beginning, middle, and end. Maybe they were just counting on people getting their wrestling fix from Rampage on TNT afterwards, because that looked like a very in-ring heavy hour of a pro wrestling show. So overall, for the 3 hours, I think people might be a little more at peace with SmackDown not giving them a lot of wrestling if they did stay tuned for Rampage. But it is an atypical week. I think they wanted to, you know, sell SummerSlam. But, yeah, I mean, and they wanted to forward storylines in the matches that they did feature. You know, I mean, I think they wanted to set up the Street Profits to be number one contenders to the Usos if the Usos win against the Mysterios at SummerSlam. And I think they wanted to further the dissension with Rey and Dominic that might lead to them losing. I mean, they're certainly flagging a few things that might happen, but I mean, the matches at least had a purpose in that instead of going with two longer matches, you know, they went with the matches that were a bit shorter, but had storylines behind them. But anyway, yeah, Brandon, your thoughts.
I think that they were thrown off a little bit by the fact that Cena and Reigns took a half hour at the top of the show. I mean, that threw the format off a little bit tonight, not to give them too much credit, because I 100% agree that there needs to be more focus on the talent that's sort of waiting in the wings, that they've got on ice, trying to get them ready for what's coming post SummerSlam. And I think that there should be more focus on that. But I do think tonight there was such a heavy focus on SummerSlam with it being so close, and that Cena Reigns promo really threw everything off. I mean, to have the commercial break before the promo kicked off, nothing had happened on the show yet, and then the promo itself goes really long. It was a strange way to start the show.
It was like they were waiting for the bus to arrive with all the wrestlers and told Cena, kill some time.
I had written this down in my notes. I mean, they let Roman Reigns stand at the top of that stage while Pat McAfee ran down the entire show. He talked about every upcoming segment on the show, and Roman Reigns had not left the top of the stage yet.
As so far no-show outside correspondent, Marcus, well, he said he might call, so I shouldn't give him too hard a time, but he did email. And he said, it was the opening 12 minutes, he said, especially, were just boring until Reigns and Cena got to it. So my hunch is what you're describing did not play well. It's more than a hunch. What Marcus is saying is it did not play well in the live audience, having Cena ramble, and then you go to this long commercial break before you actually get to it. All right. Greg, I can't remember if you concluded or not, but thanks for your call. Any closing
remarks? I'll just give a couple more thoughts. Sentiment that Apollo Crews is probably about done, and I was surprised he got a push in the first place to the level he did, because he seems like he's very much, unfortunately for as talented as he is and gifted as he is as an athlete and a wrestler, very much lacking in the charisma department. So I'm surprised it lasted as long as it did with him, and so I'm not surprised to see if like this is maybe the end of the road with him. But then again, you know, he wasn't given a chance, and in part because no promo time, and compare him to AEW secondary champion Miro, and I mean, the night and day contrast between, you know, the efforts to get the character over and establish it with the fans. I mean, it's very obvious. And then the last thing I'll say, and I'll leave it with this, is that you had both shows tonight closing with, in the two prime number top wrestling companies in the United States, both closing with women, Sasha and Bianca on SmackDown. And it's not a spoiler to say that Britt and Red Velvet were the main event on Rampage, because everybody knew that was already scheduled as the main event. But that's one thing, for all the talk around about Triple H and NXT and what the legacy of NXT will be, I think it's safe to say that this would not happen without Triple H's influence in pushing his vision so hard as far as women's wrestling goes. So I'll leave with that.
Cool. Brandon, anything you want to react to there?
No, I just to piggyback on that, I think that is undeniably correct. I mean, the early stages of the NXT women's division revolutionized what I think many people viewed, what many people saw women's wrestling could be in a United States promotion. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, no matter what Triple H's legacy is, and no matter how this shakes out, no matter how people view his failures on you know, delivering talent to the main roster, NXT changed women's wrestling in the U.S. forever, I think.
Yep, I agree. There's going to be a lot of legacy. Well, they're not dead and buried. But NXT has built up a lot of legacies, no matter how long they last and how many incarnations there are, and the women's division and what they did with it to accelerate it and reinvent it is going to be maybe number one on the list, no matter what else happens. All right, Greg, thank you so much for the call. We'll now shift to our roundtable segment with PW Torch podcast contributor Javier Machado, who is also known as Javier from Miami. We'll play a little intro music there. Awesome. Javier, welcome.
Hey, Wade. Hey, Brandon. How's it going, guys?
Good.
Well, I'm not going to try to convince you on the John Cena promo. I didn't hate it. I liked it, but I did agree with your criticisms of it. They just don't, yeah. You know, I'm more fine with the meta stuff, but that's, you know, personal taste. I thought the beginning, I got
you. Well, you said it's
the biggest
what,
problem
it's
with
bad, the, I'm sorry, Javier, you said it's bad taste. I couldn't quite hear what you like the meta stuff. You said, but it's bad taste.
Well, no, I didn't say I like it. I necessarily,
sometimes you're okay
I do,
with it,
but you know, but not this one, because it's right. Working at, it's cross purposes. It's not, you know, like you said, there's like a cognitive dissonance there of what you're seeing versus what, you know, what he's saying when it comes, you know, to particularly right. Earlier stuff that, you know, I was down on that part particularly in the beginning, because he really hit that harder in the beginning part of the promo. And he's still kind of doing it like that weird style he adopted like around WrestleMania, that he's kind of like jokey. You know, so
yep.
Which I've not been a fan of that tone that he takes. But the thing is, I there were a couple of good things. I particularly towards the end, and they dropped a lot of that stuff, and they were just going at each other. There was some stuff that I really liked on that, mainly in like the acting of the people involved. Like when Cena said, "I'm going to do you a favor," and then Reigns turned to Heyman and goes, "He's going to do me a favor," and then Heyman ad-libbed, "You should thank him." You know,
yeah.
That was a great moment, which it popped Reigns. I disagree with you, Brandon. When he made the Nikki Bella comment, Cena did sell it, because he had been pacing up and down the ring, basically no selling everything that Reigns was saying with a smirk on his face. But when he brought that up, he actually stopped and he dropped the smirk, and then, for a few seconds, and then he resumed his pacing. Almost like, you know, he gave like a reaction like, you know, we agreed we weren't going to go there.
Which I thought was,
did anyway.
Was super, I thought it was super transparently manipulatively. Like Cena doing that didn't make me think, oh, Reigns went somewhere he's not supposed to. It made me think Cena wants us to believe that Reigns went somewhere he's not supposed to. You broke up on air. You're feuding with this guy. You're taking digs at him, and he can't bring up your ex? Like, so, I thought that contributed to Cena seeming like he's a little rusty right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's acting, when, you know. I'm not, you know, but if you're looking at, like, you know, through a microscope, like, you know, like what we're doing, that, yeah, you critique that part of it. But overall, I thought it was, you know, he did sell it. I'm not saying it was, like, a good, necessarily a great moment, but, like, great acting. But at least it was something that – it was a detail that they usually wouldn't really bother with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My point was more so just the fact that, like, Cena – like, why should Cena care? Because, again, like, their breakup was highly publicized all over Total Bellas. I mean, like, everybody knows. It's not like Reigns was going to some private information. And in a promo that was full of, like, shoot style comments, it was presented in a way that made it seem like it was supposed to be a shoot comment when it really wasn't.
And that's where I think a lot of viewers are rolling their eyes going, Cena, you think we're going to buy that? You think that's going too far? I mean, we could tell for months you weren't that into her. Nikki's the dolt who couldn't figure out you weren't that into her. I just think you got to pick your spots better, Javier. I know what they were going for. I'm sure there's some people going, whoa, at home. But I think it's a smaller audience than Cena realizes, and I think there's a lot of people sitting out there going, oh, you're trying to get us to believe that was a going too far shoot moment. And even if you just storyline-wise, you know, even if it's not going for, like, oh, I can't believe he went there. Instead, it's just storyline. It's as Brandon says, it just doesn't make sense. So I just didn't. I think Cena's guitar's out of tune right now. I don't think he's that. I don't think he got a really good response. But even from the beginning, like, the stuff he was scripted to say sounded like he was expecting to get half boos, and he hasn't adjusted his game. And I don't think he brought it tonight.
Well, yeah, I'm not saying, because the way I saw it wasn't like he cut him to the quick and it hurt his feelings. It was more like, man, that was petty to go there. There was no need for that. So not like it, you know, it hurt his feelings or anything. And the other thing I did like, and this is for commentary purposes, was the Dean Ambrose line, and then hearing McAfee say, oh, no, awesome, like, you know.
McAfee is the best. And McAfee had a few moments tonight where it was.
He did. I had written one thing down. Cole asked when during the Ray and Dominic match. Cole asked McAfee because they were talking about the inexperience of Dominic and his age relative to the other people in the match. And Cole said that Dominic's only 21. And McAfee made a comment, and Cole said, you know, well, what were you doing at 21? And McAfee said that he was in college on a scholarship, and he had something about taking out $40,000 in student loans so that he could party with his friends. And I'm just like, yep. I don't think there has been a more relatable sentiment conveyed on WWE commentary in a decade. Like,
yep.
that single line right there, like that comment told me that Pat McAfee is not completely under the thumb of Vince McMahon. That's all I needed to hear to know.
I love the concept of going to college for free, but you still burden yourself with college loans so you can buy all the keggers, host all the keggers, and buy pizza for everybody in the dorm. I loved when the ref kicked Boogs out of ringside and McAfee was like, no! Like, it was just huge, the thing. And then I don't know if this was the best line because there's a lot of candidates, but when Corbin produced the credit card scanner on his iPhone, and I don't know if it was Corbin or Cole was like, where did he get that? I think it was McAfee. But then when Kevin Owens played, McAfee just very dryly said, bringing his debit card, I assume. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's sort of, you had to be there moment, but oh my God, that was great. You know, what will Corbin do now that he's at the depths of where rats live in cities? When Corbin took the briefcase from Big E, McAfee said, this disgusting scumbag. Mm. Can he cash in for that? Mm-hmm. Like, he was so genuinely curious. The best. Now I remember the best. I'm going through my report here. When Sasha Banks was going to sign the contract, then she pulled her pen away. She's going to sign it, pulled the pen away. And under his breath, McAfee goes, pump fake. So he was gold tonight. He was gold tonight. Javier, go ahead. Go ahead.
You mentioned one of the ones that I had written down, which was when when Corbin stole the briefcase, but it wasn't for him, it was for Cole, because when he said, "Can he cash in for that?" And Cole, you know, Cole's into it. So he's like, you know, reacting to his question, which apparently, you know, looked like the way he approached it was extemporaneously. And then Cole responded like, you know, no, of course. But the thing, when he said no, if you listen to his no, he went through so many emotions as he said that, because he went, no.
Yeah, like what am I supposed
started
to say?
With exactly, because it was like he started with, of course not, that'd be stupid, and then like, wait a minute, I know the kind of story that normally I'm peddling. I'm not sure, maybe he could.
Yeah.
That one no took us through like this entire emotional spectrum.
I don't know if either of you happened to catch Michael Cole appearing on Pat McAfee's podcast or his radio show. I saw just a brief segment of it, but Cole just heaped praise on McAfee and essentially credited him with completely rejuvenating his career and making him love what he's doing again. I don't know if that's a bigger praise of Pat McAfee or a bigger indictment of Corey Graves.
I know. I even think of that. That's thrown a lot of shade.
Yeah, McAfee, I was a little on the fence in the beginning. I thought that he was overall a net positive because of the mainstream sport aspect that he brings to the table for them. But in the weeks that followed and the months that have followed, I just think it has been such a net positive. I mean, revelatory in how good he has been, how consistent he's been, how real he's come off.
While shilling, like he feels, like he said, like he's hyping the show and talking about SummerSlam. What a great time to be alive! And it's like we're in the midst of a pandemic and climate change is melting everything and killing everything, and there's fires everywhere. But SummerSlam, like, you just know he's happy to be here. It's just and doesn't feel like a con. It's believable,
right,
Brandon.
And
like
the thing is that Michael Cole says those things too, but it feels like a corporate punchline.
Yep.
And with McAfee, it just feels like he's a fan who just loves this. He just loves wrestling, and he's so excited that he gets to do this after football. And I just think that it's great for the product. It's great for the television presentation. It's great for the fans. And it's also the relationship works both ways, because it is great, and it cannot be underestimated how great it is for WWE to have this guy appearing every Friday night on their TV shows and on their pay-per-views, when this same person is interviewing the likes of Roger Goodell and Ian Rappaport in the afternoon. I mean, that's huge.
Yep. Yeah, Mac, I am sold on McAfee, and I love seeing him in person at SmackDown 2 weeks ago. He was, even if all you did is watch him all night, I mean, just watching him is entertaining. I still love Cole going to rejuvenate my career. It's like that one time Sean from Tennessee closed out the caller portion of the show, and I'm like, Sean, this has been great. What a great way to end the show. This has rejuvenated the final segment of the post show. Javier, anything else for us?
Oh, okay. I'll remember that. The other one, and I'll use this as a segue to something else. The other McAfee moment was what kept playing Shinsuke's music through the when they were introducing the IC title, and McAfee goes, "Could you stop playing the music?" He was still dancing.
Yep.
So stuff like that is cool. But it's funny because on that match, my brother texted me, and so I'll frame this as the question. He texted me during that right after the match. Cruz got the jobber entrance and loses the title. I guess Aziz kills Cruz next week. Do you think that might be what happens?
If I cared enough, I would think about it and then answer it.
Yeah, I mean.
I'm just not sure I want to put the energy into deciding if that's likely, Javier. I care that little about that act right now.
Well, yeah,
Brandon,
how about you?
I don't think I can bring myself to care. Yeah. I guess. I guess. Like, where do you go? If they want to get something out of Aziz, like, what can you do? I mean, is Aziz ready to go in the ring? If he is, then I guess you make a tag team out of him. they need more tag teams, but
yeah.
Well, because I at first I was because the reason I thought of that it might be a possibility was because I started running who's going to be Shinsuke's opponent because I don't think they're going to this is going to go on with Cruz like how you had mentioned that. He's basically not been getting entrances for a while now and pretty bit much been, like, barely on the back burner. I mean, and as an aside, that's the reason why I have such a hard time remembering which title is on which brand when it comes to the secondary titles that, you know, whether it's the U.S. or the IC, because they don't do anything with them. They're just, like, they're not important in any way, shape, or form. But, yeah, so I was thinking who's next for Shinsuke, and I'm like, well – I outside of maybe Sami Zayn, but I thought he was going to take some time off. I don't know if he's, if it was just a short time or not. But outside of that, I don't see any other heels for him because Corbin's, now apparently going to be going into something with Big E. So that's the only thing I think of is that maybe they pivot from Cruz to Aziz.
Yeah, I haven't looked that deep, but maybe there's somebody in NXT that they can. Oh no, they cut everybody. yeah. I mean, they didn't really cut everybody. There's plenty of people there, but I don't know. Bring up Tommaso Ciampa. I don't care if he's happy and comfortable in NXT. Bring him up as a heel and let's do it.
Well, I mean, if Adam Cole resigns, maybe put him straight into
Hey,
and you might get that four-star match with.
Totally, yeah.
I really hope that the little delay overlapped you saying the four-star match at the same time I did. That'd be great.
I think we did, yeah.
but yeah, I forgot to mention, back to the Cena promo thing, I was hoping, because Cena had been doing some of this promo stuff, some of the meta stuff before. I was hoping that when they finally got face-to-face that Roman was actually going to check Cena on the stuff that he was saying, that he was going to say, yeah, that was back when, the last time we crossed paths. It's true that, I was, in a different place, that I wasn't being successful or as successful as I wanted, and then like turn it into, but this is, this is a different era. Now we're at my table and I stop, caring about the fans and basically check Cena on it and then, move it into something else where Cena's still like living on the laurels of that, famous / infamous promo, back when he, when they first ran into each other. Where he just, demolished Reigns. He should have said that, that was then. This is a different Reigns. Where have you been since you've been in Hollywood? I was really hoping, when this whole entire thing started, that when they got it face to face, that this was where they would go. But no, they just basically are trying to continue that same storyline from that last encounter. But things changed, but they're still playing it off as though that last encounter is still relevant.
Yeah. Yep. Good point. Anything else, Javier? Quick, we actually do have our on-site correspondent calling up now.
No. Go VIP.
Awesome.
I'll just plug that. Have a good day,
guys. Appreciate it, Javier. Thanks. Appreciate it. Yep.
No problem.
All right. Very good. All right. So we are going to go to Tulsa for our on-site correspondent, Marcus, giving us a call. Marcus, thank you so much. Great to hear from you. Glad it worked out.
Hey, how's it going? Actually, leaving Tulsa now.
Did the show last a long time, or did you just hang out after the show?
Well, the show lasted a while. I left a little early. I left about 5 minutes before end of show because I was not going to miss Rampage, so I went to the parking lot and watched on my phone.
Wow, that's commitment. Oh my god. Did they advertise a dark match? Like was there like an edge match or something that they advertised for fans, or a Cena match?
So it was Usos and Reigns versus Cena and Dominic and Rey. who won, I guess, Cena.
Okay, I'll tell you what happened, Mark. Marcus, I'll tell you what happened. Dominic tagged in, got in a few spots, tagged out to Ray. Ray took a beating for 6 minutes, hot tag Cena. Cena took a shot at Reigns. Reigns ducked out of the ring. One of the Usos charged at Cena. Cena gave him an attitude adjustment, and it was over and the crowd popped.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's what I thought 2 weeks ago, and I don't think it's been that every week. So you might have made a good call there. By the way, I did promise listeners we're not going to do Rampage spoilers on the show, so it's fine if you talk in generalities, but don't talk about the news items because some people might be listening to us before they watch it over the weekend. Yeah.
Appreciate the reminder.
Sure,
because it's definitely worth leaving for, I'll say that. We were actually at Fyter Fest Night 2 as well, so this is the first time I've had a comparison of another wrestling show for myself to WWE. And this is also the first time I've been to a WWE show in a while. It feels like it's changed a lot. I mean, the first 15 minutes, I was trying not to scream my head off out of boredom because we spent 8 minutes during a commercial break with Reigns just standing at the end of the ramp being blocked by the invisible. None of it made sense. The commercial breaks were, it's just like, is this real life? It doesn't make any sense to you as a fan when you're there, at least not to me.
So when Reigns came out, they went to a break.
Hey, Mr.
said that, but what... clarify, like, what went on during that first break? Did they play videos on the screen while Reigns sat there, or did he leave and come back? I didn't quite pick up what you said happened during that 3-4 minutes.
So when Reigns music hit, as far as I can tell, it almost went immediately to commercial, probably, 30 seconds after he stood there. He stayed standing there on the ramp. They went to lights out, and Cena's just walking back and forth. I think they would occasionally show, like, a commercial on the screen, but there was, like, 2 periods of them standing there.
Wow.
It was just dark, and them just standing there. And I'm thinking to myself, do people behave like this in real life?
No.
If I'm having a one, I'm not standing here just staring at him. Like, I'm going to go up and say something. And then also to the person who was speaking earlier and said it would have been nice to hear Roman Reigns, come back with that was then, this is now, I've changed. I agree, it would have been nice.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it wasn't working for him.
So how did the crowd take to Cena in general for his ring entrance at the top of the show? Because the reports, and including me being at SmackDown 2 weeks ago, Cena's been crazy over with crowds. And it sounded like there was an attempt at a Let's Go Cena Sucks chant, and the Let's Go Cena people shouted. Very few people chanted Sucks, and it died off. So I'm curious about the initial pop for Cena and describe the crowd reaction from what you experienced. But also, did he lose the fans or gain momentum, or was it kind of up and down the more he talked?
I think it was pretty much your positive reaction. I mean, fans were hot for Cena all night. Whether you love him or hate him, you respect him and you really enjoy the show he puts on. And let's face it, Cena's the ultimate fan manipulator. He's been doing it for over 10, 15, whatever, how many years. He actually can turn an audience really well. Now, before we went on air, there was one guy, ringside, who did a really good job of getting the entire audience in unison to pretty much start the Let's Go Cena Sucks, and it was perfectly even back and forth. But that was right before we went on air. Once it went on air, I think it had more trouble gaining traction. But
that happened in Minneapolis, Marcus. For me, that happened in Minneapolis 2 weeks ago, too. Before they went off on the air, there was that chant. And the same thing, it was like fans were doing it, but it was like the same people were doing both. And the Cena Sucks didn't feel like there was actually vitriol or anger. It was more, this is just a fun thing to do. And I think, and it's interesting it happened again, I think the fans in the building are like, we'll do it for fun off camera, but on camera we want Reigns to know we don't like him, and we want Cena to know we do. And I don't think people will even for fun chant that on air.
I agree. I think that's definitely part of it. I think it's also just a little bit of the fan just having fun, a little bit of the respect. I see it almost similar to when people say Kurt, when Kurt's music hits and
you suck.
Everybody's singing it. It's not like we actually hate the guy.
Yep. Yep, I agree. So the promo worked. Yeah. Were there any lines that really stuck? Because I was not a fan of the kind of meta stuff, break the fourth wall. I'm going to try to get cheap heat by, you know, a Punk reference, a CM Punk reference, a Nikki Bella reference, and vague references to ratings. But I'm curious how it played in the live building, if one of those or some of those worked better than others.
So in Oklahoma audiences, stuff like that tends to never break through because in my experience, every time I go to a show here in Oklahoma, it's the majority casual audience. So you don't have intense, like, the majority of the people around us, when they weren't seat fillers, had no idea what was happening. Like, I know the people sitting behind us half the time couldn't even remember the people's names, which, you know, as big of a wrestling fan as I am, I'm sitting just in my chair trying not to explode out of, like, how do you not know who these people are? Like, pay for a seat and not know what you're watching. So our audiences don't tend to respond to any third wall breaks as often, except for the ones that are much more public, like the Nikki Bella stuff and all of that. They're going to respond to that. But when, like, I have to agree with you, the CM Punk reference, when I like a third, fourth wall break, but it's got to make sense. And that was, to me, just a deep shock factor. That was like, you know, we're here in Tulsa. It was the same form of a cheap pop, but just in a fourth wall version. I don't think it responds well here, but maybe if it was in a more intensely, you know, wrestling fan-based audience, maybe it'd get a reaction. But here, definitely, it fell flat.
That Cena moment felt to me like it was John deciding, like, well, I've got my finger on the pulse. I know what's going on. AEW is a hot company. CM Punk showing up next week. Let me sneak this in here.
Right. That's how it just felt cheap. It felt like when Michael Cole says something that Vince is telling him to say at the moment. It's almost like we can see right through it. Why'd you bother?
Yeah. I mean, Cena could have said, you drove Dean Ambrose out of WWE so he could go wrestle in front of half the people each week. And it would have been like, oh, okay, war's on. I respect Cena. Take a shot. It is 2-1 SmackDown to Dynamite in the ratings. All right. But, like, you know, just do it. Don't, like, half do it. If you're going to go to war, go to war. If not, then just stay within your world.
Right. And the thing is if you're going to make a comment like that, you know, running off to Ambrose, it has to cut and make sense. And, you know, for me, when he's, and I'm like, but Roman Reigns didn't run off Dean Ambrose.
Yeah.
Like, that's not why he left. So that doesn't fit. Like, my immediate response, y'all, I have people in the car with me, but my immediate response was, well, it's more like the company system invented what ran him off. It's not so much Roman, so that's not going to put any heat on Roman. I don't understand why you'd use that as a line except for a cheap pop, which in Tulsa isn't really the place you're going to get that.
Yeah, it's not as though John Moxley was exactly shy about his reasons for leaving. I mean, anybody with an internet connection can find it pretty quickly.
Hey, Marcus, if you're on Bluetooth and it's safe, would you be able to go directly into your phone?
I could,
yeah. It's okay sound, but we're getting just enough road noise. I just worry about the listeners.
Let's see. Better?
Yeah, that cut out like 80% of the road noise. I appreciate it. Yeah, but if you don't feel it's safe, if you're driving or something, then please shift back.
No,
Brandon,
I'm perfectly fine.
Cool. Brandon, go ahead and ask a question of Marcus.
Yeah, I was going to shift to the main event. It was we've talked kind of ad nauseum about the fact that it was a very talk-heavy show tonight. The matches were definitely short. They took up the sort of the chunks in between the three major anchor segments, all of which were promos. So by the time we got to the main event segment, the contract signing between Bianca Belair and Sasha Banks, did you get a sense that the live crowd had worn out at all? Or did you think that the reactions for Belair and Banks were still really strong, or did you sense some fatigue at that point?
From the audience, I didn't really notice too much of a change. I would say maybe, I think,
Marcus,
that had more to do with. Hello?
We just lost your signal for like 2 seconds. You're good.
Uh-oh. Okay. As far as the audience's total reaction, I don't think it died down too much. It was pretty, like maybe a little bit, but not overall. There was, I would say, in the hard camera audience up in the stands towards the lower end, you probably would start noticing a lot more of the first couple of rows getting angry, and that's just because there were some obnoxious fans on the floor that wouldn't put signs down throughout the entire show. And we had the person in front of us almost get thrown out because he was just tired of watching signs all night.
Interesting.
But the overall crowd, I don't think, died down. I think you might have had some hard camera people getting worn out. But overall it just seemed, I think what it was is, and this was definitely what it was for me, is I came to watch WWE, a pro wrestling show, or in their case, an entertaining show. And they failed at that one simple task many times to entertain, because their promos are very, you just feel so, what was the word we were using? Like just stagnant and washed, and just like there's just no life in the segments at all. The only one that is one that, you know, some people believe is a punishment, and that's Corbin's. You know, he's the only one that's actually kind of pulling some stuff out of people that seems like, you know, I can actually have a, you know, almost at times visceral reaction where I can actually have, like, you know, I agree with what this is being said here, or I disagree with what's being said here, or this guy's a punk, this guy isn't. But then every other segment just seems like talk. We're coming out, we're talking in front of you. It almost seemed like we were there to watch commercials, not matches. And so when you get to the matches, they're matches with no build, with no story. And so you have an audience of mostly, you know, kind of casual viewers who came to watch a show, and when they're talking, they're not saying much. And when they're having a match, we don't quite care.
Yeah.
With the exception, and I guess that might differ when you get some Pat McAfee, because when I tuned in and finally heard y'all talking about it, it sounded like a show I want to watch. So maybe going back and hearing that makes a world of difference, because I will say, you know, one of the things that probably got me so in love with AEW is every time I turn it on, I feel like I'm watching one of the biggest shows in the entire world, because that commentary team truly makes me feel like I'm excited. And so hearing y'all talk about Pat McAfee, I think it might be the only saving grace of tonight's show. Besides, I mean, and I don't want to take away from some of the wrestlers that did do amazing, you know, Corbin and Kevin Owens, great segment. Bianca Belair and Sasha Banks, love those two, killing it. Dominic and Rey, that match would have been great, but that's another primary example of where us as fans, it's boring when you do the same. Like, I thought I was going to have a really good match, and it was turning out great. And then what, we have to throw a stupid little, hey, I'm going to get distracted by people on a screen that can't actually do anything to me, and let me look at that. And like, no, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't happen anywhere else in life. Why are we doing this here?
I think every fan at every WWE TV event should bring a sign that says, pay attention to your opponent, stupid. Mm. And if, like, 100 people are holding that sign up every time that the distraction finished, maybe we can shame WWE into dumping them. We'll just have Ray yell at everybody like he did Dominic. just Ray's at ringside. No, pay attention to the ring. That guy can hurt you. This person can't.
Right. And the thing is it happens every show now. It's like there's not even one show where we can't go a show. Match decided fairly in the ring with a actual winner and loser, and someone comes out with a result. It just doesn't make – like, nobody can go over. No one can – like, it just – it's so frustrating.
Marcus, what was
you have some of the most amazing wrestlers.
No, totally. I mean, you're preaching to the choir on that. What was the attendance like, by the way? How full was the building?
You know, I'm not used to this building, but I would say if I compared it to what I saw on camera for Rampage, them being at 100%, this would have definitely been closer to, I'd say, maybe a 70% audience fill. If you don't fill up, they didn't fill up the top. So the top was curtained off, and then I'd say probably about 70% of the lower bowl down. So not bad for their average show out here. They very rarely ever sell out.
But the lower bowl, excluding the upper deck, from the entrance stage that the hard camera kind of points at, wrapping around counterclockwise, that kind of ribbon
wrapping
was
around
full.
Was mostly full. Yeah.
Yeah.
Once you get to
the hard
camera, there's a lot of open space on hard camera side, but
okay. All
the way over the hard camera, it was mostly full.
This was the first show back in front of the live audience for them where I was picking out empty seats throughout the night. Could see, and it was sort of surprising how frequently they were doing close-ups on certain areas, because usually they're really protective about that, about covering up the empty spots, and they weren't quite as vigilant about that tonight.
I think they were running out of seat fillers. Because we were in an area of heavy seat fillers, and they were running out of seat fillers often. So I don't know truly how many because of that, because it seemed like they had a large amount of seat fillers and they were running out.
Interesting. Because
I think the row behind us ended up permanently filled with all but like two seat fillers, and that was the two people behind us who didn't really like some of the seat fillers didn't know any all the seat fillers didn't know anything, and then one of the two people behind us didn't know anybody, and they were there with the person who paid for their seat. But it
was it,
they were having a hard time keeping it full.
Was there a warm-up match tonight before SmackDown started airing?
If there was, I missed it. I believe it was I heard somebody what was the match before? We didn't. Neither one of none of us thought we were outside trying to get in at the time.
Yep.
We traveled from OKC, so we were running a little late.
What do you think of the big screen in person and the production values of the show? Setting aside everything else about it, just did it feel like a cool set with the upgraded screen?
You know, first impression looks awesome. Looks really cool, bigger than life. It's pretty beautiful in person. It's definitely much more eye-catching in person than on TV. But there's something about less screen. I've always personally, like, whenever they would do the sets for Night of Champions or stuff, I've always personally loved when they bring in physical elements with the digital. And so this kind of a set, though it's cool, it just seems, I don't know, it's just not, it almost seems like I'm watching a kid's show. I kind of wish they'd put a little bit more rugged in there. And when I say that, I mean, like, it's okay to not have everything lit up all the time, you know, because that brings more focus to your wrestlers.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. One other question in my notes, and I'll throw to Brandon for something else, too, if he's got anything. Were any surprises, or I'm sorry, any reactions either surprisingly intense or low compared to your expectations in terms of, you know, Seth and Ziggler and Rude or anybody like on the show just jump out as, whoa, that was more than I thought or less than I thought it would be?
You know, Seth was a lot less than I thought it would be, actually. You specifically mentioned Seth, and I'm actually happy you brought him up. I was actually expecting a little bit more reaction from people out of him. I mean, he's easily one of the best, but it just fell flat, in my opinion, which I was – even for me, I was shocked that it fell flat. I don't quite – I'm trying to kind of maybe figure out what it was. Maybe it was because he was whispering a lot, and half the time you couldn't hear him. The speakers did get pretty quiet around that time, and the, right after is when they showed the segment from Mysterio, and you could barely even hear them in that period of time. So it could probably be because there was trouble hearing him at some point, but I was pretty shocked that people were just flat for Seth. Like, his entrance, you know, it was mixed because you love him, but you also, then you remember, oh, yeah, we don't like him right now. I was a little shocked that people weren't booing and maybe louder than they were, but it kind of had its hills and dives. It was a little rockier of a promo audience reaction-wise than I expected for Seth, because he's usually got a hot crowd.
Did the Mysterios or the Street Profits get a bigger pop if it seemed distinct enough to remember?
Sorry, say that again. I couldn't hear you.
Sure. Did the Street Profits or the Mysterios get a bigger pop if it's distinct enough to remember? I wouldn't know. I wouldn't be able to guess. You'd think Ray, but no, not necessarily.
I would have to probably say Mysterios, just off of the initial.
Yeah. Yep.
It was kind of it was one of those ones where it was like, oh, wait, is that what we think it is? And then, like, it got louder, and you heard a note or something, and then it was just on everyone turned, and it got loud.
Yeah, yeah. Brandon, do you have anything else you want to ask?
I was just going to say, any guys or gals that you were hoping or expecting to see tonight who were maybe advertised that weren't on the show? I know that there were some conspicuous absences, like Finn Balor, for example, who, you know, just came back. Tony Storm, who's been off TV for the last several weeks. Edge was not there tonight. I wasn't sure if he was advertised. Was there anything that you were expecting to get that you didn't?
Not necessarily expecting, but I am just a little extremely perturbed that we didn't get a single woman's match the entire night. There was a dark match before. I take that back. The dark match was a woman's match, and I know that. But during the show, we didn't get a single one with the roster they have. How we don't get a single one is beyond me. I was personally wanting to see Edge just because that's one of the few I've never seen in person. I am happy that, you know, when I went to Fyter Fest, I did get to see some people I've never seen, so that was awesome. And Edge is one of those ones that...
Marcus, we...
I've never seen in person.
Say the last part again, Marcus. We, again, had a little break in the cell connection.
Okay. I was basically saying, when I went to Fyter Fest, I got to see a lot of people that I'd never seen. And every time WWE's come to OKC, Edge was never on the show that I just happened to be going to see. So I've never got to see Edge in person. Mm-hmm. So I was hoping to see him, but it is what it is.
Well, I got to see him in person. He made his entrance and then got beat up. And then I didn't see him anymore. So... that wasn't great either. I mean, I've seen it before, but yeah. Cool. Well, Marcus, anything else you want to bring up from the live show experience? Fan chants, merchandise. Did you see any AEW merchandise at that show? Because we've been trying to find somebody wearing an AEW shirt of any kind at a WWE event since the crowds returned, and we haven't found one yet.
So I didn't end up wearing any of my AEW shirts, and that's simply just because I didn't think to, and honestly didn't know if they were going to give me hell because WWE is the kind of company that would do that. And so I just didn't want to bother with it. However, I did, and I still am currently wearing my AEW hat. So I did have a hat
okay.
on. But I didn't really see anybody else walking around with stuff. I might have seen, I think I saw one kid wearing an Orange Cassidy shirt, which in my head was like right on. But that was it. That's pretty much all I think I saw AEW related. But
anything
I did see
the
some
show,
guys running. I did see one other group of guys running to their car so they could probably start watching it because they heard me playing it really loud in my car.
Oh, funny. That'd be interesting if there's a surge of mobile views in the parking lot in Tulsa that they picked up in their tracking.
You could probably find it.
Any chants that are noteworthy or anything else you want to share with us?
There was one chant for Corbin, if I could remember what it was. You know, I can't remember what it was. There was a really funny chant that a couple people got going, and it was right, like, as they were going to commercial, and then they started playing stuff, and it just ruined the chant, and I had really wished they had taken off, because it was pretty funny. I was really happy with the person who said the Corbin owes me $20 sign. I was that was a good one. It made me – that got a laugh.
Yep. Cool. Any closing notes, Marcus, before we let you go?
Nope. That's it. Go VIP.
Thank you so much, Marcus. I appreciate you coming through and giving us a call here on your ride home.
All right. Y'all have a good one.
And Marcus, ignore all the stuff earlier in the show when we buried you for not calling in yet. It was all in jest. All in jest.
Yeah, I had to. Signal's kind of bad there, and of course I was not missing Rampage. I had to watch that.
I'm ready for the first dance
next week.
I'm mostly kidding. We just sort of buried you a tiny bit, but it was mostly Brandon, I got to say.
Well,
man,
let's be honest. Let's give Tulsa the leniency of crap that we're – well, let's just give the city the crap because technically I'm not from there, and I – called in. I've always given you calls for OKC, but this time I'm going a little out of the way.
I appreciate it, and the fact is it sounds like it was a very casual crowd tonight, and a lot of people were staying home to watch Rampage, probably, who otherwise would have been an on-site reporter.
To be fair, Wade also threatened to put me in a corner for 10 minutes earlier for refusing to take the lead over our caller at the time.
Yeah, yes. You're still stewing over that, aren't you, Brand?
Yeah.
You already served your suspension.
Well, it's a great place to get some. It's a great place to get some thinking done. You know, you can get over there, maybe read a little bit. It's fine. It'll work.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, cool. Marcus, thanks so much. Hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, no problem. You have a good one. Bye.
Yep, too. All right, Brandon. We're going long. I hope we start going shorter one of these days with these shows. But I mean, I watched that show. I'm like, well, you know, this might be a shorter show, but it's like they give us stuff to talk about, and then we get on-site correspondents, and that's always – it's fun to have them back. I will read to close out here two emails that I flagged here on Rain Cena because that was just such kind of the main topic of the show. And for people who did email on that, I want to at least get some of that feedback. So Jay from New York said, after watching the opening segment on SmackDown tonight, I have a request for the entire wrestling business. All caps, please stop mixing shoot comments and kayfabe comments. Pick a lane and stay in it. Hearing Cena talk about Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns talk about Nikki Bella didn't make me want to see the match. Why allow people to shoot in one segment and then go back to normal for everyone else? If kayfabe is really dead and gone, let it be dead and gone all the time. Maybe I'm in the extreme minority, but I think pro wrestling would benefit from a 5-year ban on any and all, quote, shooting. Thanks. And take care. Yeah. I mean, I agree, obviously. And then Eric from Charlotte goes, I'm really curious what your thoughts are on the Rain Cena promo because I seem to be much lower on it than the consensus opinion I've aggregated on Twitter. By the way, I talked to Rich about this on everything this week. Twitter does not represent – I mean, it's fine. It's fun. But like they say in politics all the time, like if you think you know what's going on in the country, wait till the votes are in. Don't read your Twitter feed because Twitter is, you know, the extremes on both sides, and there's this 85% in the middle that isn't represented there on a lot of things. And
it's a
I think
very
maybe,
easy way to get into D doomsday scenarios and just sort of lower your overall morale going down the Twitter rabbit hole.
Yes, yes. So he says, first, I think Cena came off as a real jerk during this segment. Reigns has been a scoundrel and a bully all year with his character, and rightfully so. But that doesn't give Cena the right to stoop down to his level and come across as just mean to Reigns and still be the lovable hero. Secondly, I think Cena leaned on the fourth wall too much, and it took me out of the segment. The way he kept going on about Raymond's layer of protection and how he's the only one that can stop him, I kept interpreting his message as Reigns is bleeding the ratings dry, but no one on the roster is good enough to replace him, so I'll show up and do that for everyone else. That makes him come across as a sanctimonious and real D-bag, Cena's word, not mine. That's not even including the Ambrose remark from Cena, which was everybody's favorite line on Twitter. The problem is that it's a bold-faced lie, whether shoot or kayfabe.
Mm-hmm.
Reigns was probably the only thing Moxley liked at the end of his run in WWE, as described by Moxley in his interviews, saying that Reigns was still a close friend and Vince's creative direction was a deciding factor for him leaving. Or, and hopefully not, it was supposed to be taken in story, which would imply that when Ambrose, the character, left, it was Reigns, the character's fault, because Roman got cancer and wasn't able to team with Ambrose anymore? I'm sorry for long ago, but I had a few issues with this segment, and I didn't even touch on Cena's hypocrite point, because that would open up too many cans of worms on Cena's career history. I just felt I had to share my point, because I saw so many people loving this segment, only because Ambrose was mentioned. Oh, P.S., I didn't mention Renee Young as people Moxley would still like in WWE, but that one without saying, my point still stands. I feel like I had to follow up in case a smart aleck wanted to correct me. Ha-ha. It's a VIP member from Charlotte. Thank you, Eric. No, I mean, they added other things to make me like that promo less and articulated it well. And, you know, boo to Twitter for rewarding, oh, he said Ambrose. Yay, that's I can't believe it. It's like, no, that's not good. That's not – good promo isn't – making you drop your jaw going, I can't believe he said that. That's not a good promo. That's cheap heat.
Yeah, I'm not quite at the point that you are with it. I did find redeemable quality in Cena bringing it back around at the end to talk about how he put Reigns over in the sense saying that Reigns is probably going to beat him down. He's going to beat him up. He's going to hit him with the Superman punch and the spear. And all Cena has to do is just survive. The idea that, you know, Cena has this longevity and he's the never give up wrestler. The fact that he doesn't need to beat down Reigns, he just needs to beat Reigns. And I did think that there were redeemable aspects to that part of the promo. But, yeah, I mean, he did get way too cute. I have seen similar in the sense that Twitter seems to certainly like the promo in quick glances in other places. Many seem to have really liked the promo. And yeah, I mean, the biggest thing that I'm seeing over and over again is, you know, he mentioned CM Punk and he mentioned Dean Ambrose. And I don't know what that does for a feud with Roman Reigns. I don't know how mentioning a guy that's about to debut in AEW and a guy that is in AEW under a different name is supposed to sell your main event of SummerSlam. I don't think that it computes. I didn't walk away from tonight feeling that the hype for the Reigns and Cena match has been damaged, but I don't feel like they added anything to it tonight. And that's less of a, it's not a degradation to the SummerSlam card. It's just a missed opportunity to make it even bigger.
I think that's fair. All right. Brendan, thank you very much. How can people follow you on social media?
Yeah, you can follow me at BLeClaire12 on Twitter, I talk wrestling. I talk lately a lot of music because shows are back, and I am ecstatic. Please get vaccinated so I can keep going to shows. I mean, granted,
yeah.
There's plenty of you know, less selfish reasons to get vaccinated as well, but if you want to make me really happy, then I would love to continue going to concerts and wrestling events eventually, too. I spent the weekend in Boston last week getting to go to my first major show back, and it was wonderful and a lot of fun and a little bit weird, and I really hope that I continue to get to do that. You can find me.
So if you bet on the fence, if you bet on the fence, people, if you're back hesitant for any reason, I would say just get vaccinated. You're going to be fine. You know, talk to your doctor. They went, if you want to be, you know, they know their stuff. We've been getting vaccinated for 100 years. These are safer than the ones that were given out for polio back in the day, and those were fine too. Like, just, we all need to do this. We can get to a tipping point. We'll all be fine. Get your boosters. I can't wait till I get my booster too. So there's my thing. But if my spiel right there didn't convince you, for the sake of Brandon's concerts,
I mean,
get vaccinated. It we all got to do our part. We all got to do our part. And so, yeah, all right.
I mean, I've tried the selfless humanity approach. So, I mean, that didn't work. I might as well just go with what benefits me directly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I talk wrestling, I talk music and whatnot, and certainly now that football is back, I'm ecstatic and gearing up for what's going to be a really fun fantasy season. So you can catch me talking football sometimes. And yeah, I am glad to join these post shows. And man, what an exciting time to be a wrestling fan!
As Pat McAfee would say, what a great time to be alive! All right, I'm sorry to some of the callers we didn't get to. Obviously, we're gone so long here. I hope you all understand. We'll try to keep our call segment shorter when we have a lot of calls, so we can at least give everybody a chance here. Some of you jumped on late, maybe because of Rampage. So. Thanks everybody for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time you download. If you didn't check out yesterday's show, I did do a mailbag segment and reacted to some WWE and AEW topics, and then ran a flashback show with some fascinating CM Punk conversation, and Christian was in the news. It was a topical best of show to run down for sure. So if you did not check that out. I'm trying to remember what else. You're talking about a potential Cena heel turn, Cena Rock stuff, John Morrison, CM Punk's criticism of The Rock. So check that out if you haven't, but there was like a half hour mailbag segment at the beginning. And then Jason Paul joined me on the flagship on Tuesday. And we talked a lot of NXT and a lot of other topics. So check that out if you haven't yet. Just search Wade Keller on your podcast app. If you're not subscribing to our other podcast feed, the Blue Logo Show, the Wade Keller Podcast. In addition to these, logo show, the post shows. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, check out our 7-day-a-week stretch of free shows hosted by others on the Torch team, the PW Torch Daily Cast. All you have to do to get those shows for free is search PW Torch on whatever podcast app you use. And finally, of course, you can go VIP and get everything on one feed or split it up into custom feeds. We have all that laid out for VIP members, and we are compatible on Apple Podcasts. And all the in-house pre-recorded ads and plugs get edited out of the show. So it's a cool, streamlined listening experience. On behalf of Brandon, Javier, all our callers, our emailers, our on-site correspondent Marcus, this is Wade Keller thanking you for choosing to listen to our show, and we'll talk to you next time.